and welcome to episode 123 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mass from Mars, and I'm joined by the creator of the webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
The man with a floppier clock than Salvador Dali, it's Mr. Tony Esmond.
I'll just finish some crisps. I'll probably save that packet, I think.
Mm. Yeah. Should we save that info for the outtakes as well?
Okay, yeah.
Stay tuned, folks. Seriously, stay tuned. And this week, we're joined by an artist who's become a regular on the convention circuit. He churns out tons of awesome artwork, not to mention issues of his own comic series, Sub Diablo. Seriously, he doesn't stop. Like, there's new comics coming out seemingly every week. Not only that, he's one of the most enthusiastic people on the planet. It's our pleasure to welcome Mr. Daryl Thorpe to the show.
Enthusiastic enough? Is that what you wanted?
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, right on cue as well. Only on the 8th time we went for it. That was good.
I also want to know, how many packets of Haribo have you had before you decided to record tonight?
Well, the actual answer, Vince, is none. It's all Daryl, baby.
Yeah. Look, don't talk sensible now, because we've been trying for 10 minutes to get some sense out of you.
I almost strangled myself.
Yeah, it's going to be a good show this week. I can already tell.
maybe.
Yes.
No pressure.
Yes, but how is everyone this evening?
Good. I've got a bit of a problem though, Vince.
What's that?
Well, I've got all this amazing content, but I'm fucking stuck. Where I need someone online that's kind of like a Netflix for comics, but at the same time, I can also sell hard copies to fans. But
well,
I just can't.
Well, let me
good
stop
idea.
You right there.
That's great.
Right. You want to check out ComicHouse.com.
What's Comic House, Vince?
They're our fine sponsors, as they are every week. Not only do they help us every week keep this show on by being a sponsor and listening to these sponsorship ads that we do, which are, let's face it, fairly unprofessional.
What? Since when?
But the high professionalism.
Yeah,
they also they're fighting the good fight in the name of independent comics, as always. And you got to love that. On the site comichouse.com, you'll find a huge range of indie and small press comics, lots of which we've talked about on this show. Plus, they have a featured section with a great choice of books from the likes of Brethren Born, Alex Automatic, Slice Quarterly, and a great selection from the current featured publisher, Blue Fox Comics. You've read some of that stuff, haven't you, Tony?
I have, yeah. Is that Simon Burks? I can't
remember. It is, yeah.
Yeah,
good stuff.
Done Robin and several other titles.
Yeah,
there
very good.
Go. Yeah, and you'll be able to find a whole load of their stuff on Comic House. And also, you can sign up for more info on the great digital app, which is essentially Netflix for comics, and it's just going to help Daryl out no end.
Yeah. And you're my shit.
You can go to comichouse.com/app to find out more about that. And there's no shit there. It's nothing but great indie comics.
Nothing but fucking gold polished turds.
Can I butt in quickly and just say hello to my mate Dragon? He said he can't be bothered listening to the whole show, but can he have a shout out? So I said, alright, I'll make it near the beginning. I just remembered.
Yes.
Yeah, cool.
Is he actually Dragon?
He says he wants to call Dragon. I think a kid once said, "Let's beat up Dragon," and he said, "Right, I'm Dragon now." And he started sort of labelling everything in the office with Dragon. So
that's an odd thing for a kid to do, though, isn't it? Like to give someone a cool name just so you can beat them up. I've never heard of that before.
Yeah, that's a weird one. I don't know why. Maybe they'd watch How to Train Your Dragon or something. I don't know.
Yeah,
let's take the Dragon.
But that's quite recent, so I'd imagine a bunch of kids attacking an older man.
Yeah, it was a little bit like that. Yeah.
Well, I guess actually saying that, if I think about it, if I was going to beat the crap out of someone who was like not that hard, say, maybe I'd give him a badass name. So when I repeat the tale, it sounds a bit more epic.
That is true.
Yeah. I kicked this guy's ass last night. Yeah, his nickname's like Terminator or something, but I fucking
his name was.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Instead of, oh, you should have seen it last night. I kicked the shit out of Beanbag. No, it wouldn't work as well, would it?
Yeah.
It's like Teddy's night, isn't it?
Yeah. I'll just knock about my beanbag every time.
Here we go.
Yeah. Yeah, Daryl's been looking forward to this for quite some time, haven't you?
I mean, yeah, I guess so. I think as a fan of the show, Like, I'm pretty excited just to hang out and talk to you guys anyway, because a lot of the time I'm obviously talking to myself whilst listening to you.
So I worry about you if that's the case. If you're talking to yourself while listening to us.
Well, you usually say things like, oh, for fuck's sake, Vince, and like, hey, do you have a line? Things like that, usually. And where's Dan's Dictionary Corner? Little things like that, really. You know,
we should bring that back.
Yeah.
I think we should.
I'll tell you what, later on this episode, we'll see if we can dig something up and do it just for you.
Yes.
We have had guests on that say, oh, like, I talk back to the podcast sometimes, try and join in, and then sometimes they come on and they don't say anything, they just sit there listening. I don't think we have that trouble tonight with you, Daryl.
Awesome. I was thinking, actually, what would be amazing is if, do you remember, remember you had like those kind of talks where they'd do a radio program live on stage and in front of an audience. I always thought it'd be fun to watch this show like in like a sofa environment whilst kind of being a part of a bigger audience.
Well,
sort
of, that's one of the tiers on our Patreon.
I'll tell you what, when it comes to this show, there's a lot of tiers. Trust me. There's a fucking lot of tiers.
One of the blokes at work went to the opera recently, and he was trying to tell me what tier of the audience he was in, and I literally couldn't breathe. I was laughing so much. Because he just did it to impress a girl, and it was just making me cry with laughter.
Did it work?
Yeah. Probably. Yeah.
I remember going on a date to a young lady to the theatre or something, and I got the cheaper tickets, lower end tickets, and like, you're classy, you're so high up.
Yeah.
It's like you're getting fucking vertigo.
What panto was it, Dan? What panto was it?
I think it was Dulwich Hamlet, Peter Pan.
Phil from EastEnders was in a panto up this way the other day. That was good.
Really?
Yeah. But he's cracking in panto. He's a little bit of dogging at the weekends, but he does the panto well.
They start bringing out the leaflets of the panto about now, and it's great. They look fucking awful.
Yeah,
I mean, Phil. Someone said Phil Mitchell looks like an uncooked sausage in a shirt.
He does.
Yes.
Very accurate. Like, who's that guy in Shooting Stars? The baby.
It was George.
George. It's like as if he'd been doing crack for 20 years.
Isn't it? I'd like to point out Phil Mitchell does not do crack, apart from in the TV series when he does crack.
Yeah.
Which is not real.
We cover all the bases on this show.
That's it.
Should Phil Mitchell ever try to take legal action against the ACP?
Although if you are Phil, I'm talking about him like he's actually like Phil Mitchell.
We do a Phil Mitchell comic. That'd be cool, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Phil Mitchell fights the devil and things like that. We could have him fighting different monsters every week, and occasionally get bang out and go dogging.
Prolix would fucking love to do that, wouldn't he? He loves a bit of East End, a bit of
it. Does, yeah. Nick would do a brilliant Phil Mitchell. Phil Mitchell goes to the supermarket. We could just do stuff like that, couldn't we? I once did a comic called Cat Slater's Got a Penis, but it didn't really take off, to be fair. No,
and you can't talk about it anymore.
No, I can't talk about that now.
No. But what we can talk about is a lot of arty talk this week. We thought we'd do something a little bit different. We talk about sequential artwork every week on this show. Naturally, usually in the context of one of the brilliant comics we've read that particular week. But currently, it seems that the medium of comics has never been more visible in some way, shape or form. And this, we just wanted to talk a bit about comic artwork, styles and events, and more that happen away from the page. Now, personally, it seems to me that there's some form of comic book artwork exhibition happening every week at the moment. I'm constantly hearing about stuff. That's probably always been the case, mind you. But I think in the UK it feels like they're more visible now or heard about than ever before.
Yeah.
So to start us off talking about it, do you guys think that's the case, that they're more visible than ever? And how do you feel about the current state of sequential art in other mediums?
I genuinely think there's more now. I think having like lived pretty much in London my whole life, and I would die to go to an exhibition where they'd had 2000 AD art on the walls. Or something like that. You've got the Cartoon Museum, you've got the House of Illustration, you've got the exhibition wing at Orbital. All the time have comic exhibitions on, you know?
Yeah.
I've just got an email from Nobrow about, I think it's called The Cube, in the East End, and they're putting a comic exhibition up there next week. I think there's an awful lot. I think because comics are now crossed over into that cool realm, haven't they? You know, it's acceptable to be sort of cool and read comics now. I think there's more. It's a shame that there weren't more when it was more popular.
Yeah. It's interesting, though, that you mentioned Nobrow. Yeah. Only because, like, as one of the interviews you did with the head dude over there, and yes, then I've read those about them as well, that they interestingly didn't select sequential artists to do some of their books. They got illustrators.
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes it interesting, because then you have people looking at it from a completely different perspective, simply from the fact that you're like, can't actually draw sequentially, so you have to kind of think up ways of getting around telling a story where you don't have to draw the same guy doing the same thing in different panels. Does that make sense?
That makes sense,
because I found it very hard just to switch over. Because
of your background, for people who don't know your stuff.
So, where do I begin? I mean, I did fine art at university for like a year, and then I decided to do graphic design because there's no money in fine art, quite frankly.
Right.
So then for the last 12 years, I've been doing graphic design. So I work on big kind of projects that go from everything from kind of Japanese denim companies through to kind of perfume houses. And like the company that I work for, which is called The Narrative, we basically specialize in helping customers connect with brand story, basically, on all different levels. Right. So my background is very much graphic design. Now, at uni, it was all Banksy and things like that. So everyone was doing kind of like stencils. So I was very much into that kind of scene. And a few years later, after working, I kind of got to the point where I was very, very good at vectors and Photoshop, but I kind of felt like I was cheating because I was using loads of reference to draw.
Right.
And I thought, maybe I'll give drawing a bit of a punt again. Like, I studied illustration, I think it's about 5 years ago now, and started looking around, and I was doing loads of these characters, and then my director said to me, oh, you should make this into a book. So me and my friend Ed worked up a Run Run Awry, which was a 300-page prose.
Yeah.
And I went to Nottingham Comic Con 3 years, was it 4 years? Maybe 4 years ago. And I rocked up with loads of prints and the concept for a book, because it was going to get published by Boardline Press, who were about at the time, and they were super excited about it. And I remember being in this room, having not read a comic for fucking god, like a decade. Mm-hmm. Walking around and seeing all this like indie stuff everywhere and being like, shit, like, this is cool, man, this is like, people are doing stuff. And then I was like, this is easy, it's just, you know, the drawings are like good, but, and I can draw, so
yeah,
I'll just make a comic like every other fucking idiot, you know. You're like, you're so kind of like, at the beginning you're like, oh, I'm gonna draw stuff, it's gonna be amazing, oh, this is awesome. And then you sit down and start to draw it, and by like page 6 of inking, you're like, fucking hell, I am tired of drawing this guy. Like,
yeah.
And why the fuck did I put a complicated hat on his head? Why has he got machine guns? What was I thinking? This is not good at all, you know. But I knew, in order to kind of, you know, the bits I enjoyed about indie comics, which is the storytelling, the freedom, the fact that there's this really interesting movement going, I had to just dig in and kind of just keep drawing characters and getting used to putting people in different positions, drawing different pieces, to then hopefully one day actually start putting all those bits together into like a panel form.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I find interesting about Nobrow, is whenever I look at their stuff, which is what was kind of my gateway, which is, I think, is a very big gateway into the comic world for people like me, is you just look at it visually and you're like, wow.
Yeah.
Like the colors, the way it's printed, like the production values, the way the story is told, like everything about it is just on point and affordable. And you're just like, I want a piece of this. I think.
I mean, they've got a big eye to design as well, haven't they? You know, they're
massive.
Yeah. What led you to go to Nottingham there? How come you found yourself there? Because I'm right in thinking you were next to Dead Canary, were you, that first year?
That was actually, weirdly, no. That was last year was Dead Canary.
Right.
It was a mental, but yeah. No, it was a few years before that, actually. So the reason was, is I feel I float in between loads of different genres. So right. You've got like street art, illustration, comics, animation, and game design. And my stuff has always got like a narrative to it, but I don't necessarily, at the time, didn't necessarily put it into comic form. But then the visual identity of it, people that like comics seem to really engage with like my kind of characters and what I was basically saying about them. So for me, I was like, well, you know, where can I sell this stuff? Like, I can't sell it in an art shop because they think it's not art. Can't really go around sticking it on walls everywhere because, you know, I'm fucking 30 years old and I don't want to be legging it from the police. I'm too old. And then I was kind of like, maybe a Comic-Con, I guess. So just literally just like applied online, and Kev was like, yeah, sure. Like, as long as you're not doing any like fan art or anything, like, is it all original? I was like, yeah, it's totally original. And he was like, yeah, cool, come along. And that was that. And I was kind of sat there thinking, fuck, what am I doing here? You know, like all these people producing all this stuff. I was like, I felt like a bit of a fraud just having prints. And so I was like, next time I'm coming back to a Comic-Con, I'm having a fucking comic book. And I did it.
Yeah.
And it killed me.
Nice.
And it killed you.
Yeah.
But going back to what Vince says about there being more out there, I mean, yeah, I think personally you can look at some graffiti and see it as sequential. Can you? Do you think that's a...
Yeah, it's a tough one because, like Sarah Harris was saying to me today, hi Sarah, I love you, by the way.
I think Sarah's partner is quite a well-known graffiti artist, isn't he? I'm right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, hopefully, I'm going to go down there. Yeah, I'm hoping to go down there and hang out with them and do some bits and kind of they're going to show me around and stuff. But I think, like speaking to her, there's like a lot of artists, like she pointed out, Kid Crayon, Captain Chris, a few other people as well, Squirrel Art and SP0, who are all Bristol-based lads. And they've been doing kind of storytelling on a wall, but a bit like murals. But what I found, what I started thinking about when we were talking about street art, I suddenly thought, oh, actually, without sounding too studious, are hieroglyphics not sequential art?
Or cave paintings, aren't they, really?
Yeah. It's telling a story in sequential pieces of art that connect together to tell a narrative. So therefore, you know, it's a bit weird. When you break things down, I find it just blows my mind. It just, as we said earlier on, it turns to porridge.
let me pose this for everyone then. Do we think we're too precious about what is a comic and what isn't a comic? Do we think as long as there's some kind of story between images, they don't necessarily have to be an action? Do you see what I'm saying by that?
Yeah.
You know, what do you think?
In some ways, I know, well, certainly since starting the show, like what a comic is or isn't has really changed in my mind since we've started doing
Me too, definitely.
Because I've seen stuff that I would consider a comic, but there isn't really a strict narrative.
I mean, Tilly Walden springs to mind.
Gareth Hopkins. That's a comic, but to the layman, if they saw it, would they really understand what it is?
Yeah.
Well, I was reading a book to my son for bedtime. There's a sequence, a page of about 8 panels of a crocodile jumping off a diving board and going into the water, and it's like a storyboard. I was like, this is an illustrated book, and then it goes into a comic in the middle here.
Yeah.
I wouldn't class the book as a comic, but it has this sequential sequence in the middle there. That's a comic.
Yeah.
Well, I would argue that a series of words on a page with images is, if it continues, I think the words are as important as the images often. Yeah. And I think it depends on how it is done, you know?
I honestly would say I'm not too precious about the term and... I would kind of take it as is. If someone wants to call something a comic, I'm not gonna I think it's such a broad term that it can encompass so much that you shouldn't be too precious, I would say.
Do you know what
how you guys feel?
What I find absolutely astounding is like the respect of like monetary value people put to comics and art. Like, if you I've said it to so many people, so if I'm repeating myself, then just tell me to shut the fuck up. But I can't tell you. I mean, I will do a painting like on a piece of apron paper, or I'll do it on a board, or I'll do like a print, for example, right? So I'll set a print for like between 10 and 15 pounds and, you know, it'll be boarded or whatever. And that print will probably take me, my sort of pace, probably about 3 hours to do like one of my illustrations colored. Is about 3 hours worth of work from conception to finish. That's my kind of rate. And people buy it. And then when I do a comic that takes me, say, a month to do and get it bound and put in a little book and, you know, do the cover designs and then push it all out there, I say it for like $3.50 and people are still fucking like, And I'm like, there's been a month of work. I could smash out like fucking 30 prints, make 300 quid or whatever on just prints. But I mean, it's not where my heart is. That's the honest truth.
Do you think it's people's like almost subconscious preconceptions of what art is? For instance, like prints are, you know, they're going on the wall, they're being framed or whatever. Prints are huge in the convention scene,
comics in general.
I mean, all of us here,
I think it's almost an easy way to buy almost original art without the big price, is the way I look at it.
I think it's definitely that perception of worth, as in if you're giving someone a print, it feels like that's more work to more individual, whereas a comic back in the day, maybe there's a conception of it being mass produced and disposable. When you're being asked for a higher fee, maybe if people got that preconception of kind of bulking at it.
There is a certain element of, like you say, like narrative is disposable, and this is across the board as well. Because we're not just, you could talk about comics.
You do that for fiction books.
Like fiction books, films, you know, like if you talk about a film that takes months, you know, sometimes years, hour and a half done, and people don't think about it, and then they move on. You know.
It's mad.
And it's
fucking
always,
mad.
It seems to be more with narrative.
Interesting. Yeah.
I was at a situation where I wanted to rewatch Tombstone. And I don't have it.
I need to watch that again.
£3.50 and I was like, fuck off. £3.50 And he said, actually, that's worth £3.50
Yeah.
But I could probably buy it on DVD for like £2 or somewhere. Gotta get that film. Again.
Such a good film.
I got my recorded off the TV VHS copy you can have.
Class.
Someone said the gunfight at the OK Corral is the best cinematic kind of cowboy gunfight, and I was like,
oh, okay,
where the fucking end of Young Guns?
Action Range, of course.
That's got Emilio Estevez in it.
Yeah, and
that makes sense.
I watched Young Guns the other day, and I was like, who the fuck put John Bon Jovi in this? Like,
sequel, isn't it? Isn't that Young Guns 2?
Young Guns 2, yeah, but still. What the fuck? You know, it was just a bit weird.
Yeah.
He's done a few shit sequels, because he did Vampires 2, call back to last week. He did Vampires 2 as well,
didn't he?
That's
a shit sequel. It's fucking got Bruce Campbell in it as well.
I fucking love Bruce Campbell.
No, sorry, that's Dust Till Dawn 2.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that is a pile of poop.
Yeah, except for Bruce Campbell, quality, that's like a seal of quality, but no.
It basically is. It's like Kurt Russell. If Kurt Russell's in fucking anything, I'm down. Kurt Russell, Sylvester Stallone.
And even if it's shit, he's probably the best thing in it.
He's like somehow managed to just take the piss out of it, even if it's shit.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just...
Moving it back to the tangent there. The kind of idea, I think the disposability of comics, or the perceived disposability, is one of the reasons that when we brought this up before about like fine art incorporating other people's comic book work into their work.
Yeah.
and making it more than it is, or they think that it makes it more than it is. Like, we can the Liechtenstein is the kind of
the big
and to be honest, I didn't know very much about that until saying the last few years, and it's like, fuck's sake, he did nothing with that. And
he's been highlighted a bit in the last few years, isn't he? I know Dave Gibbons did that like that versus, he did like a versus Liechtenstein exhibition at Orbital, and he was interviewed on an arts, I think it might have been Sky Arts, about it. And I think the interviewer said, would you rather have a Liechtenstein frame picture, or would you rather have the original art by, I don't know, Russ Heath or someone? And he said, and Gibbons said, I'd rather have the original art, and he meant it. Do you know what I mean? Quite a moment,
like,
actually.
The original artist is, I think he was in, like, on, he's on disability benefits.
Yeah.
He doesn't have much money.
Yeah.
He's not earned a penny on that. Fucking,
you should get royalties, shouldn't you? Fuck me.
Yeah.
But, like, we don't even have to look far back as that for examples of people doing similar stuff. I mean, I read that mailer from you today, Tony.
All right.
About the artist he spoke to, and I think it's a bit of a different thing, because Liechtenstein was a kind of line for line taking of the other piece of art, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, this is not, I mean, I wrote it for Beardrock, so I sort of had to, I managed to find my my article and sort of and reposted it, but it was a guy, I mean, I don't suppose he'll mind, because he gave me permission to publish the article, and I let him, you know, I recorded him and we talked it through. But there's a guy called Rich Simmons, and he did an exhibition at the Modern Gallery in Devonshire Street in London called Kryptonite, and it was reused Neil Adams, Jack Kirby, Brian Bolland, and the like, and he would perhaps recolour, move them about. If anyone has been to Gosh over the last couple of years, there's a bit of street art opposite of Batman and Superman kissing. If anyone's seen that,
yeah.
And I think he either used that in his exhibition and nicked it, or that's his art on the wall, if that makes sense.
Okay, yeah.
So, I mean, he was actually a nice guy. I wasn't too hard on him. I don't know what you thought, Dan, but I wasn't too hard on him in the article. But I did basically get to the point where he was saying that his pieces were sort of social commentary, because I think there's an Yves Saint Laurent sign on one of the Wonder Woman pieces, and, you know, there's Batman Superman kissing, which is obviously some kind of social commentary, I suppose. You know,
wet dream.
So
I would say, I'm not being down on anyone, but I went to university to study this kind of stuff, and the amount of bullshit I've heard over the years of people justifying their work, and it's just, there's no content there, there's nothing. But, like, them standing next to it and talking for 20 minutes about what it means doesn't cut slack with me. Maybe because I'm more of a commercial artist.
Sounds like me at a Comic-Con.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Just, like, absolute BS, and you can read into this and read into that. Yeah, okay, fair enough, fine.
But then again, where comes the rub is, okay, he says that, and you do get that sort of shit off a lot of artists, don't you?
Yeah.
It's when you get to the point where he's charging $7,000 for a canvas. Yeah.
But it's not only $7,000 for a canvas, it's $7,000 with other people's work on it.
Yeah.
It depends. That there's a level of reworking when you've reworked it and it's like, okay, that's gone beyond what it is. But there was a chap last year that we kind of like was not harassed, but flagged a little, that essentially he had like a red canvas, and then there was a picture of Punisher from Punisher Warzone, like in the bottom left hand corner or something. And it was like, you've done nothing here. You've just, like, transposed one illustration onto your canvas.
A red canvas,
You're charging no credit.
That's super interesting, because, so I went to the Saatchi Art Fair, when was it? September. No, beginning of October it was. So I went to the Monaco Art Fair, which is like street art and stuff. And then next door it was the Saatchi Gallery. So it had loads of artists and stuff that they deem as like really decent and whatever.
Mm. Yeah.
And one of the guys there was this geezer who had, like, cut up loads of marble stuff and then put it in, like, a box frame and then had them, like, layered, so it was, like, three-dimensional.
Yeah.
And he was just, like, sending them for... I didn't really look at the price, but I walked past and was just like, you fucking dick. Like, what have you done? You just fucking painted and sticking a few bits together. Yeah. There's nothing there. There's no even a reason behind it. Do you know what I mean? It's not even like a,
This is pure commercialism. You're trying to paint that up as being artistic.
Yeah.
It's not. Like it's just you're making yourself a few quid, which is fair enough, but if it's at kind of some...
Dare I be cynical, but they're blatantly trying to make money off something that's popular at the moment.
They couldn't give a fuck about it, could they, really?
But... When does it become acceptable, then? That's the question. When would we allow it? Or personally, not allow, but when would we feel it's okay?
Well, stuff like Gareth Hopkins is so far over the line of being acceptable. Because like he's taken inspiration from pages and reworked them to a point where their own thing.
You'd never guess.
But like stuff where we mentioned that the Punisher thing. If I take that Punisher element away and it's just a red canvas, that contributes so much to it. By removing it, there's no content there that's worth anything to me. I think there's a very hazy line, but I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. I know I was in the East End a few months ago, and there was a big sort of street art painting on the wall, and it was the Vision kissing the Scarlet Witch, and it looked a bit like to me like a John Buscema panel, and then they painted around it Love Will Tear Us Apart, and I remember looking at it and thinking, I actually quite like that. It was painted on a wall, so presumably, I don't know how these things work, I don't really understand street art, but presumably it wasn't for cash.
The things that change it for me.
Right, okay.
If you're doing that for the artistic reason and to send a message out, that's fine, but standing next to it with your hand out, that changes the message for me.
It does change the dynamic of it, doesn't it, I think, completely.
There's loads of people that did it, though, like... Was it last week? Week for last, someone put a picture up of Gertrude from I Hate Fairyland, one of Scotty Young's characters, and she was just on this wall. And then there's a few people chatting about it, just saying, "Oh, such a cool character, nice one." And the guy's like, "Yeah, thanks." He didn't go, "Oh, it's from
that's this. The rub." I mean, like,
yeah.
I mean, Scotty Young's doing all right. I'm sure he's monetary, he's fine. Yeah. But I mean. You just want to get a bit of credit, don't you?
Yeah, like, exactly. I mean, I find the idea of that
happening to be like presenting something else that wasn't mine and said, oh, well done, Danny, done good. I'm mortified. I'd be like, no, I didn't do this. This was Joe Bloggs or whatever.
I mean, when it comes to like graffiti and like, we've all seen characters from comics we love, like sometimes they're line perfect from what we see in the books, like Tony mentioned. But when it's on a wall and it's just free to see, there's absolutely no difference for me between that and what any of us do when we do fan art. When we're drawing characters and we're posting them online, we're doing exactly the same thing, only we're not doing it on a wall. So we're not trying to sell these things. I mean, how many famous characters have I drawn? Do you know what I mean? I've lost count of it. We all do it. I think it changes when it becomes, I've drawn this picture of Judge Dredd and I'm selling it, I'm selling 100 prints of it or. It's when you try and monetize it that completely changes it, I think. But I, in terms of credit, that is a niggling thing for me, because the artist obviously knows about it when they draw it. So if someone asks them about it, then I think it's their responsibility to say, thanks, it's from this.
Yeah, you get a lot, actually. The indie scene gets absolutely raped sometimes, because like you see things online now all the time where people like Wolf Skull Jack,
has a terrible time of it. Amazing.
She just gets, they just rip her off all the time.
Like,
an amazing
German
artist.
Company.
Yeah.
Seriously.
I missed this one.
Wolf Skull Jack.
Harvey Art on Twitter.
Wolves and skulls. It's amazing stuff.
So many times it's like, this Etsy shop's doing this, this company's doing this. It's like, fucking hell, this must be a full-time job for you.
They basically steal her artwork, add some text, and sell it as T-shirts.
There's a camera company that made a series of fucking candles with it on it. Candles! What the fuck?
used to be DeviantArt was the place that like these unscrupulous print guys would go to. People would post up fan art, really nice pieces of work, and then they would download them and then print them onto canvases, and then that'd be the kind of thing you'd see at comic cons and those big kind of boards they have.
So, it's just sad, isn't it? It's like, you know, you just feel sorry for these kind of guys that are really trying to craft their art in their own time, not probably getting any money doing it for as a hobby, and then people profiteering off of you know, their concepts and characters, you know.
It's interesting, isn't it? But I mean, for example, I would love a print by any of you guys of a Marvel character or a DC character. You know, I quite like buying prints.
A print or a commission, because a print's a very different thing, isn't it?
I mean, yeah.
Because like,
that's how we met, wasn't it, Tone?
Sorry, mate.
That's how we met, wasn't it? You bought a print for me of a spaceman.
I did. That's a brilliant print. That's one of my favourite prints as well, actually. Yeah,
yes!
Yeah, that is really good. Yeah. That's sat next to my computer for about the first year of recording.
Shit, man.
But I don't know. It's weird, isn't it? Because I would like to see it by you guys. I really would. Maybe, like you say, Vince, maybe a colour commission of some kind.
Yeah, someone said, I'll commission you to do X character, but I think there's a bit, like, it's a bit different if you've got a whole wad of prints sitting there.
I'm
not going to be harsh on somebody who does that. I mean,
yeah, I like a Marvel artist or a DC artist or, you know, one of the, you know, a big professional artist, and you go by their table and they've got like a little variety of prints you can buy. I'll tell you why I like it. It's because I would love to own all the original art in the world, but I can't afford it.
Yeah.
But if I go to a convention,
impossible.
Completely. But I would like to go to a convention and buy. I could either buy, you know, a page of art for £120, or I could buy 12 prints.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's kind of where it. As a consumer, that's what I like. Yeah. I think it's a whole different ball game when you're taking someone else's art. I think that's a big no-no.
Yeah.
You know, taking someone's character, I think in small doses and with enough love, you know, and catering to people who want it, I think can be. It's very much the world's horses for courses, isn't it? The world's very much. You know.
What's really interesting. So I'm not very. I mean, I wouldn't say I'm well known. I have like a few followers and people like my stuff and whatever. But
yeah.
Thought Bubble was pretty awesome for me because it was the first time I was on a big stage with people from everywhere. And there's this, I met this chap, Totti, his name is, Joe Totti. And he's been doing stuff, he did the Corbin stuff for the Dead Canary Boys with Matt Finch and Chris.
Yeah.
And he sent me a private message on Twitter. I was like, dude, I've just got home. I've looked at your zines again. They're fucking nuts. Please, can we do like a character swap, or can I do some of your character stuff? Like, I want to draw it so much. I love the designs. And I was like, fuck yeah. Like, let's do it. Send me some of your shit. And we'll do like a back and forth thing. But, you know, he asked me. It wasn't like I suddenly went on Twitter and I was like, hang on, that guy's character looks a lot like my character. Yeah. Hang on, who the fuck is this guy? Do you know what I mean? Like,
I was quite touched. He's performing a sexual act on another character, which is a whole other world of hate, isn't it?
Oh, you mate, know what I mean? Matt, times I've had someone say to me, well, actually, it's only happened twice, but... you don't draw any of them naked, do you? And I'm like, no. And they go, oh, okay. And then they walk away. And I stop and think, hang on.
Right, before anyone writes in, not me.
To be fair, there's a market for that stuff if you want to kind of, if you're willing to go down that route. Have to look on Kickstarter.
There's those books.
I know the Vander had a little incident in New York this year where somebody came over and went, how about this? And he's like, yeah. And Vander could kill you. Do you know what I mean? He's a big guy. He could probably beat you up. But, I wish I'd been there for that, actually, because it would have made me laugh no end.
But like those books on Kickstarter, where their goal's like, $2,000 and there it's up to $25,000. I can see why the some people go down that route.
We just need to do a superhero called Tits Woman or something, don't we? Just fucking get it out there.
Tits McGee.
I made a joke about Debbie McGee last night.
I like that so much.
No, didn't you, Dan? Because I saw you on Twitter and they go at Bake Off, and then it was fucking the one show.
I was on form last night.
can you say on air what the joke was?
It was that Debbie McGee was on the one show, And the bit I saw, she was on about 10 minutes, and all they kept asking her about was fucking Paul Daniels and, like, his career and stuff. Yeah. And it's like, well, hold on, she's here to sort of, like, promote herself and stuff. And it's just the fucking patriarchy. Just once again.
He did magic, didn't he?
Yeah.
But he did. You know that.
That wasn't magic. Just grinded Debbie McGee down like that. The lovely Debbie McGee.
Yeah.
Yeah,
she's looking for her age, actually.
She was hot in the day. Yeah, actually, she's aged well. She's like a wine, isn't she?
Didn't he?
Yeah, a vintage.
Almost went creepy then. A bit didn't.
Almost.
My favourite thing is the fact that Vince just said, "Can you say it on air, Dan?" Like, there's nothing worse that's been said. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, we're all swimming around in the shit. It's
cesspool of fucking vile language
on this show.
So kind of like, if you was going to point out to some listeners, right, here's some people to look at who you kind of admire and think have got something to say, and kind of using sequential art in their work, like street art, etc. Who would you point people at?
Non-comics way, yeah.
Yeah. You sent us a big list today, and it was fantastic.
List is a big fucking list.
I think we should actually put it in the show notes, Vince.
I'm a big fan of Marfood, mostly through Matt Harrower, because he got me into it. And I love his stuff. I actually think he's better non-sequentially. I think his covers are better than his sequential stuff.
Kind of prefer his earlier sequential stuff. I love his sort of a scratchy and inky sort of art that he's doing now, and I totally agree with you, because I think sequentially he worked better. I know certainly when he did the Clerks comic book. Do you remember that back in the day?
Yeah, definitely.
When he was doing stuff like that, and it was a cleaner,
slightly
line,
simpler style, wasn't it then?
It was like thicker, cleaner lines. But now he's like almost in the same way that Sean Gordon Murphy is, like, you know, just attacks the page with ink, doesn't he? Really.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's a genius, Marfood. Yeah. I really do.
Oh, God, yeah.
Absolutely love his stuff. But I think I would rather buy a nice big canvas print of something of his than I probably would a comic. And that's saying a lot for me, because I think comics are obviously number one for me always.
I think for me personally, if I was going to recommend stuff, I would probably, Jim, like you mentioned. Just because he's got, if you go to his website or you buy some of his comics, I've got his art books and stuff. There's just so much for everyone to kind of, you can pick and choose what you like. And I think it also shows, for me, my style has developed really from comics. So I was inking and painting in one way, and then I started drawing comics, and then my whole style flipped and changed around. And then I went back out to do more painting because you suddenly start looking at things differently. And I think it's the same as, like, Jamie Hewlett. Like, I'm a massive Jamie Hewlett fan, you know, from his stuff where he did, like, obviously, like, Tank Girl, when it's in Deadline magazine, which is just fucking nuts. He did a Hooligan haircut. Fuck me. So I think it was last year, and my friend, I hadn't read it really. I'd read bits and bobs when I'd seen, like, a Deadline magazine. I don't own any personally, but people have had them, and I'd flick through them for fucking Jamie Hewlett, legend, weird guy with a hole in his hair. And my friend Andrew was like, "Oh, you've got to check it out. I've got the trade back." And he was like, "It would really help you out. You should look at it." And I opened this Hooligan's haircut, read through it, and was like, fuck. He just rewrites everything, you know, like, he's flipping through panels, he's like switching colors up, he's got Andy Warhol in there. It's like, it's a fucking soup of all various art styles and color and storytelling, like, throughout. And you're just like, right in his early days, you're like, man, you know, this, it's just so different, it's so fresh, you know. You have to kind of let your inhibitions go and be like, okay, it's not standard comic panel sort of thing, but it's just really, for me, I was like, right, okay, fuck it, let's think like Jamie Hewlett. And then to go back to what he's done with Gorillaz, you know, and Tank Girl, to be fair, I think he's one of the guys that I'm, for me, when I look at my stuff, I'm like, I want to be like Jamie Hewlett. I want to not mimic him, but I want to look at my stuff and be like, why not? Like, in the age of technology where everything's possible, why the fuck should I have it in a book? Why can I not do an exhibition? Why can it not be a show? Why can't it be animated?
But I think, talking of Deadline, I think Deadline aimed at that crowd. I would love to see a collection of all the Deadline, because they did, they every week they'd have almost a different band on, so it'd be Ned's Atomic Dustbin or Senseless Things or something like that.
Yeah, and they would have, wasn't they?
Yeah. All that little period, sort of pre-Britpop almost, wasn't it? I'd love to see a collection of all the illustrations as well from that magazine.
Fucking amazing.
I loved it, because you had people like, we'd be talking about...
Shaky Kane.
Yeah, we'll be talking about This Bloke's Good Lady Wife. It had Philip Bond in it. Yeah. Brett Ewins, Steve Dillon, you know, a really interesting crowd and crop of artists, you know, really good stuff.
Jonathan totally Edwards, he was in it as well.
Who was, sorry?
Jonathan Edwards, he did the Squabbling Dandies or something he did in that.
Oh, okay.
And that
He's a great artist. I know, didn't he do, Hellraisers with Self-Made Hero? Did you ever?
Oh, okay. No, I've not read that. I do know the one about Oliver about Reed. All the famous people who've been. Yeah. Oh, that's a great book. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Jonathan Edwards did that one.
And Rachel Ball was in it as well.
Yeah.
Was she?
Yeah, she was
in
it as well. Yeah.
Nice. A bevy of awesomeness. It was British.
It had strips, but it also had articles and sort of punk letters pages, and it was all very sort of anti-establishment, wasn't it? You know, and you could buy it next to, sort of, you know, almost, I think it probably came before Loaded Magazine. It was almost before all that crazy crowd of crap that came along. But you could buy it next to NME and all this sort of thing in newsagents. Nice. It's great stuff. Yeah,
I mean, really Tank was very 90s. That's like Like one of the things of the 90s that really stick out for me was Tank Girl, definitely.
Yeah, I think it was almost anti what was going on in a lot of mainstream American comics. So at the same time as when you had the Image Revolution and you had Marvel and DC, you know, tipping their hat to that as well, you had this, and also we'll talk about it in a bit. We also had Vertigo and stuff like that, being very anti-authoritarian and aiming at that sort of punk rebel crowd, you know.
Yeah, it was awesome. So, yeah.
But that's graffiti still to this day, I think, isn't it? You know?
Have we got that kind of thing in comics at the moment? I don't think it's being addressed, personally.
Yeah, well, there's one that I might mention in our recommends, which I've actually made a point of saying I think this is this period being revisited.
Oh, nice one.
Yeah.
Well, that ties in nicely.
Yeah. So there you go. Yeah. But what do you think about the style of graffiti? Do you think it's influenced still by that sort of stuff, Daryl, or do you think there's a bit more of a manga thing coming in?
It's so wide, man. It's like street art has changed massively. Like graffiti is somewhat kind of still there, but I think more people call it street art, and then you have like contemporary street art and so on. But I think there's more artists and illustrators that are using various mediums now on walls for certain. And I think that those sort of people are then like, how do you sell your work? So there's a guy called 45RPM that I follow, who's another Bristol guy, and he does like zines, walls, pins, t-shirts, fucking everything, you know. Like, I think, like, because of the internet and because everything is everywhere now, I think everyone gets influenced so much by just culture. And I think that what's for me, like, Thought Bubble especially was exciting, because I think you look at the indie comic scene especially, and it's like everyone is just putting influences from all over the place. So it gets really difficult, I think, to kind of pin it down and go, oh yeah, that guy is drawing comic style on a wall and that guy is doing, you know, something completely different. But
It's almost like what used to be album covers. People would, you know, everyone from Crumb through to Brett Ewins, people have done, or Neil Adams, Neil Adams did a Groundhogs cover, you know. All these people sort of did album covers. They've moved, because there's no such thing really as album artwork, is there? Not very often at all. And I walk through Brick Lane, and I suppose it's where it's not seen as illegal anymore, street art, isn't it? But the elaborate designs on the walls there, you think, oh my god, that, you know, that could be an album cover almost to me now.
It's weird, because we went to Monica and they had like loads of street art on show, and right. some of it was canvases and some of it was like bits of wall that have been obviously put in a frame. And okay. My director, who's with me, was looking around and goes, "What do you think?" And I was like, "Yes, I mean, it's a Banksy, isn't it? But I don't know." And he turned around and went, "Look, it's not meant to be in there. It's meant to be on the. It's meant to be on the wall in the environment. Like the whole point he's put it in a particular place is because that image resonates with that area."
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like we saw the stuff he did in Tel Aviv and stuff like that. It's like if that was in fucking Scotland, it'd make no fucking sense whatsoever.
Yeah.
So to put it in a frame, you're just like, it takes it away from its surrounding, and then it kind of loses what the fuck it is. I guess going back to Roy Lichtenstein and him taking a panel out of a comic on its own, you're like, no, like, relevance whatsoever. Whereas the artist who drew it and sequentially, like, those particular scenes had a massive impact on that storyline. So therefore, taking it out of that, you're just lifting it out and... it all of a sudden on its own, you're like, I guess it looks cool, but like, what the fuck is it all about?
You know, I suppose it comes to like when the outsider artist, when the underground artist from the rebel artist goes and works for one of the big companies, you know, does it quite work as well? When someone, I don't know, if Crumb went and drew a fucking Marvel Girl comic, you'd think, what?
It would be like, what?
Yeah. Imagine. And I know that Strange Tales book that Marvel put out is considered sort of culty, but I'm sure there's a lot of people who went, what? You know, when Peter Bagg drew Spider-Man or the Hulk or something, everyone's like, what?
But then there's also that, I mean, I think one of the more successful examples of that is Mike Allred. Because when Mike Allred originally started with like Madman and stuff, his stuff was so almost pop arty, wasn't it? It was so random and out there. And I think, you know, from... what was it, the Ecstatics to Silver Surfer, you know, and obviously he did iZombie and
Fantastic
stuff.
Four.
He's really, you know, he can ride that line brilliantly. And I think his style has evolved into more of a mainstream style because of it in some ways.
Yeah, I wonder what, you know, I think fanboys are more open now, do you think, to stuff, you know, like Marvel Zombies, all these guys are sort of more open to accepting stuff that's a little bit out there.
Do you mean... The fans or like the, fans. You know, the publishers within stuff?
Maybe a bit of both, I suppose, because a lot of the fans become the people who work at Marvel and DC, don't they, a lot of the time now.
I think some of it is, you could say they're more accepting, but then again there's more comics than ever before, so they're printing so much that they can afford to take a shot on, I don't know, here's a Strange Mike Allred book, you know, to the left, and because it's not like anything we've seen before, that becomes a big hit. And then they monetize that, and then they can do more of that. Whereas if, just say, Marvel were just doing 10 books a month, would they get the chance to, you know, would those Strange books get their chance? I don't think they would.
And to me, that's where people like Vertigo succeed.
Yeah.
Because they can take those sort of stranger characters and stranger artists and writers and fit them into a book that they want to do, but sell it through a big company where they don't have to have DC stamped on it. Maybe the, you know, Epic did that for a bit. I know Dan mentioned Epic last week, didn't he? But I think that's certainly, to me, where Vertigo succeeded is where they told stuff that couldn't be told elsewhere,
and things like The Sandman, you know, arguably one of the biggest titles of the last 20, 30 years. And it's not one of the main sort of mainstream superhero type books, is it? You wouldn't get that in your standard DC book. It had to exist in this other world, so it found that audience.
And it can be seen as a breeding ground to take. I mean, Jason Aaron kind of started at Vertigo, didn't he? I know he did a couple of things, but you know, a lot of these people, Neil Gaiman kind of started there, didn't he? You know, if you
Jason Aaron had The Other Side, and then he did Scalped, didn't he?
Yeah, interesting.
I think European comics, like there's that studio I sent you called Piao, and they've got Valentin Siche, which is probably not a name. I've probably just done a Vince Hunt and fucking killed someone's name.
Hey, Anna Dan Butcher.
Anna Butcher. I've butchered it, haven't I? Fucking hell. I see what he's saying, isn't it? That's what he does. I say, hey, Dan's on board. Fucking hell. There we go. sorry, folks. I've completely fucked the pod up here. So, they did a book called, like, The World, and they did Junkie and stuff, and it was so focused around comic art as an art form.
Yeah.
And I bumped into those guys at Thought Bubble three years ago. And they're over in, I think it might be Sweden or Denmark, I'm not really sure. But, over, like, in Europe, the way they do, I mean, look, if you look at Humanoid, some of the stuff those guys put out, like, art-wise, some of the panels are, like, incredible works of art, aren't they? Like,
Yeah.
Like, it's comic over there, or it's a whole other level. Yeah, you know, I just find it. I buy books from them, and sometimes I can't even read it, but they're so visually beautiful that I just want to have them as a piece of work. You know?
I think we see it over here a bit as well. I think we see. I'd put Sinkovich up there with that. I think a lot of Sinkovich's work presents single panel pages that can be taken sort of separately and looked at and thought and seen as a beautiful piece of art on its own. You know, and I think there's a few guys I think like that. I know he's French, but Victor Hugh knows that. You know, me and Vince have seen it. I think you could take a page of his. There's a few out there, I think.
Dave McKean, like
that. Exactly. Yeah, definitely.
Is he doing much at the moment in terms of sequential stuff? He isn't, is he?
No, he hasn't done things to that Black Dog, I think, which is 2 years old now, isn't it? But incredible, you know.
I think
you should be able to switch your style up. I think you can do the single panel, the single page, the series of single pages. You know, I mean, even if you look at some of the double page spreads we were looking at on the Kirby special, you can take that and frame it, and it'd be fucking amazing, wouldn't it? You know, definitely. Yeah,
I've got a few comic books I bought purely for the cover. I got into reading God Hates Astronauts, and that was because I was in Gosh, picked it up, and there's a tiger eating a hamburger with loads of people.
Yeah, the covers are mental for that series.
Yeah, it's fucking brilliant, right? So I was like, well, I don't even know what it's about, but it sounds fucking awesome, and that's going in a frame. And I got into the series just because I think that's what I mean, to be fair, like, that's why I wanted to get into comics. I'm still kind of finding my way, I'd say, but I think that's what's, when you guys talk about indie comics, especially. And to me, Deadline and all those guys we talked about earlier on as well were very much like people like Shaky Kane in the early stages.
Yeah.
Like, there is a visual beauty that's there, isn't there? Like, as a medium, it's awesome. But I also think that, is that because you draw things that you wouldn't necessarily draw? Do you know what I mean? Like, if you're drawing a fight scene, or if I'm drawing, like, I've got to draw a world, or, oh, he's by the ocean, or he's in a castle, or this guy's got a machine gun that's got an axe for a fucking, like, arm cock or whatever, then I wouldn't actually come up with that in my head. Well, okay, I just did, but, you know, generally wouldn't come up with it on top of my head. But when you're drawing a panel after panel and you're trying to work this story out, you start bringing all these other elements in because you're building this world. And I think... that's what makes sequential art and stuff kind of really stand out. And I think that's when people take it from being just in a book onto the wall. I think, like you were saying, like 2000 AD, some of the stuff, some of the inking is just insane. Insane.
Yeah.
There's that Frankenstein inked piece you put up ages ago, and it was so...
The Bernie Wrightson Frankenstein.
Yeah. So intricate, and I was like,
that's some of the best artwork I've ever seen in my life. For me,
personally, he's got such an eye to shadow and inking, isn't he? It's beautiful stuff. Yeah.
But in my mind is like, well, that should be in the wall. And I think that's where, like, I sent you a guy called Joan Cornella, who's a Spanish dude who does canvases, but they're sequential stories. They're really twisted, but he does them all on canvas and then does an exhibition of the canvases.
He's that the really simple, twisted sort of style, isn't it? Of like,
yeah.
No, I've not seen this. I'll have to find this. Yeah.
He's the guy that does stuff where it's like three hugs and the guy's got no arms, and there's like I've got some pretty weird stuff here. Let's see if I find one that's a bit weird. Oh yeah, so a guy shoots himself and his wife, he's played a trick on his wife and has got a can of tomato juice, so she's gone and hung herself, but pretend to hang herself and doing a chin up, and then he's actually hung himself. So things like that, really.
Yeah, there's one.
It's a usual night in the butcher household, really.
Yeah.
There's one that I can see here, which is I've got to describe it.
Right.
It's six panels, and there's like a cardinal, you know, like the ones all dressed in red and stuff. Mm. He's sort of pumping his fist at the sky. He doesn't look happy, and he's got some white on his shoulder. He's got some white on his shoulder. The next panel, there's some birds flying overhead. Third panel, a white blob of something is falling from the sky. It goes into the cardinal's mouth. On the fifth panel, you can see the bird is just carrying a used condom. and on the sixth panel, the cardinal is smiling.
That's the Catholic Church for you.
Yeah, like I've got his books, and they're like, obviously he does, these were hand painted and they're put on walls in an exhibition, and he does puts into a book. And I think that in their own right, they stand up against loads of like kind of street art and stuff, and like Jim Ford and people like that. Those guys do murals and stuff all day long. So I think it's kind of, as going back to what Tony said, it's very subjective as to like
what is art
and what isn't. And I think that's why I was nervous about this kind of podcast, because I was like, oh, here we go. So it's a can of worms, only because it's very personal, isn't it?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say, mate. I think it's just down to what you personally enjoy. Yeah. I think there's no rules, is there? There's no. I was just trying to imagine there what a comic would be that I would not describe as a comic. What it would take for the visuals to mean that, yeah. And I can't actually genuinely think of anything unless it's just a series of pin-ups.
Yeah.
You know, but I was trying to think, you know, maybe you could do a story of a man's life and it's just a picture of what he's doing on the same day every year. To me, that would still be a comic. I don't know why, but there's no movement between the panels or anything. There's no sort of, you know, it's, I don't know. I just
enjoy it so much. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's like I said, when I looked up sequential art, because I was like, hang on, I really need to understand. See, visually, you know what it is, but I was like, what are the parameters of it? And it was like a series of images that follow each other that explain a story or try and get a point across. So in that case, you could have a string of paintings, individual, that if one person's getting from A to B down the other end of the room, technically that's sequential art, as is storyboard, as is a stop frame animation, if you broke it all down. I mean, it really is subjective, and I think that's what art is, right? I mean,
when
I find art, everything was fucking subjective. Like, you were never wrong, and it's like Dan was saying, you'd have some wanker stand up for 30 minutes, why a brick was his piece of artwork, and he could say it's like the modern day struggle weighted, and then you're cemented with other blocks, and then you're rigid as you grow up.
Hang on, is this something you've done?
I'm writing this down, by the way, just so we're clear on that.
But what I guess my point is getting to is everyone sees things completely differently, and it's kind of like, it's what's interesting about comics, art, and that entire medium is people presenting what they think sequential art or like their interpretation of it. The same as I say about Gareth Hopkins, you know, look at his stuff, it's like fucking nuts, but it's his perception of sequential storytelling, and it's exciting because he's not. I think what a lot of us do is we'll look at other storytellers, like I look at Andrew McLean and like Jack Teagle, Kyle Platts, Arcudi and Stuart, who did Rumble, things like that.
So good.
I know, and I'm just completely like, oh, I want to be like that. I want to tell stories like with that, like kind of ferocity, and sometimes you can get held up in trying to replicate or tell a story in a certain way, when really you should kind of sit back and be like, hang on, how do I want to tell this story? Like,
yeah.
And I think that's what makes a good storyteller sometimes, or a good piece
approaching it from a different way as well, I think, sometimes. Yeah. You know, yeah. I won't spoil what I know what book Vince is going to talk about later, but that's not a traditional sequential story, is it, Vince? Do you know what I mean?
No.
That doesn't No. There's whole pages that are just single images of things that have happened.
But by using a sequential style storytelling format, you learn. I'm gonna say exactly the same thing later, so I'm not gonna say it.
Yeah. Okay. You're fine. The other thing the example I was gonna give is I got brought up in the most horrific Catholic boarding school. You know, Pat Mills went to the same school as me, and he's written a whole comic series on it. You know, based on it. It's like horrific. And I remember, if you got in trouble, you used to have to go to early mass, sort of 6 a.m. mass. And occasionally, I don't know, any of you guys Catholics? Any?
No. I tried it, didn't like it.
They would have something called the Stations of the Cross, which is where you had to walk around. And the Stations of the Cross is basically the story of Jesus Christ. I mean, I'm an atheist now, I'm believing in this rubbish. But the story of Jesus Christ as he went to get, you know, crucified, and then he rose, and all this sort of thing. And I remember a mate of mine at school who was always in the shit equally as much as me, so we'd always have to go to this 6 a.m. mass. He said, it's like a comic. And I thought, and I never thought about it until a couple of years ago, and I think, yeah, fucking hell, it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, I wish I'd seen it that way. I probably would have made the 6 a.m. mass, because I got caught fucking stealing from the tuck shop, you know, more bearable than it was. You know.
Yeah.
They do inhabit our lives a bit more than we think sometimes, I think.
I think it's fucking everywhere.
Yeah.
You
know,
yeah.
I think it is like, you don't even, yeah, it's pretty mental. And I think even like, there are books you pick up sometimes, and you kind of start flicking through it. And then before you know it, you're kind of, they'll start bringing out various images that take you through stages of what's happened, and then you're back into copy again. And you're like, well, technically that's kind of sequential, it's leading me on a story, but there's no words to describe what's going on in the pictures, because quite frankly there's no point, you know, like,
you don't need it.
It's like the wraparound cover to a book where there's two images. There's all sorts of things going on, aren't there, like that, you know.
Yeah,
otherwise we wouldn't read three panel gag cartoons in newspapers, you know, because, you know, it's essentially a whole story and, you know, three pictures, and we've the gaps, don't we?
It's like with film posters, like, you sometimes that's got like a narrative.
Completely.
But nothing's, there's no kind of movement being, it's all kind of implied, an implied story being told within that poster and the way it's laid
and
out.
I think we benefit as well, Dan, from being a comic reader by being able to read it in that way.
Yeah.
I think as a comic reader, you read a story by reading from one corner to the next, don't you? You know, and I think sometimes you look at these posters and you think, oh, Galactus is invading, or, you know, something like that. But somebody else would go, oh, it's a weird robot.
I mean, when it comes to movie posters and harking back to album art at the moment, I'm quite saddened by the state of that as it is in the modern world. Now,
what the fuck is going on with movie posters?
They
are one of my
formulaic.
They are like fantastic works of art, and there are amazing. You know, when I see an amazing movie poster, I will probably tweet about it. I'll save the image so I can look at it, you know, etc. You know, I'll draw influence from it. But gone are the days when album covers and movie posters got the respect that they deserve. The life of these sort of things has been completely sucked out, because it has become such a commercial thing.
But you used to remember album covers because of that, you know. I remember, you know, the Led Zeppelin cover or whatever it's going to be, because of that. And you connect it in your mind to the music that plays. In the same way, the movie, you remember that iconic image on a movie poster and you connect it to the action with the movie. Yeah. But because of every album cover now, it's just this homogenized close-up of someone's face.
And,
you know,
and because it's all digital as well, a lot of it, because you know, I've designed a lot of CD covers and stuff, like bands, and in the past, and it was always, everything had a flow, it was like a story in a sense. It wasn't just a picture that had no relation to the back cover. Everything worked as a cohesive unit.
I guess that's how you used to listen to music, though. You used to sit there with headphones on or with the stereo on, listen to the entire album whilst looking at the artwork.
Yeah,
yeah, you kind of did, didn't you? Yeah.
A lot of the time I listen to music now, so then I have to listen to the other on the train.
Drops the C-bomb. Live the dream.
didn't find my lip all over that word.
Yeah. Do you know what? I was just thinking exactly the same thing. Because I you kind of do look at the artwork because it shows up on your phone. It's about the only time you ever look at it now, isn't it? Yeah, I was listening to The Flaming Lips, Yoshimi versus Bing Robots today, and I love that album.
Because it's got that
sort of iconic. There's actually a girl and a robot in a weird sort of way on the cover. You know, it sort of works. You know,
Until going back to the movie posters, I think it's the studio choices of the posters, and they always go for really safe options. There's a subreddit on Reddit called Movie Poster Porn, and basically it's just like variations of posters and different versions artists have done and interpretations, and some of them are absolutely fantastic, and I occasionally retweet them. And there was a Goodfellas one the other day where it had the scene where Henry Hill like goes over to Karen's ex-boyfriend and basically just smashes his face in with a pistol, and it's kind of like a shot from behind the Cadillac and his two friends looking on like dismay, and he's like got the pistol raised up in the air, and where it would say the Cadillac sign, it's got Goodfellas, and it's so iconic and such an amazing poster. And if you saw that, you're like, holy fuck, like what's going on here? And you're familiar with the scene, but
I mean, even though I'm saddened by what we see in the mass market, you know, what we see on a commercial day-to-day basis, it has given birth to how many brilliant Mondo posters do you see? How many times do you get proper illustrators to do?
But that's because people are frustrated at the shite they're, you know, presenting.
exactly, that harkens back to that's where a lot of great art comes from frustration in the way things are done.
Yeah, it's like alternate movie posters, which is where it's just like you say, fucking tons of amazing posters, and you think, what absolute wank stain is signing off these fucking posters when there's all these
lazy
insane
Photoshop jobs.
Some of them, the Spider-Man stuff, as a designer, I'm like, I could do a better job in an hour. Yeah. Like, fucking straight up, I know I could. I could kill it. But you never get those opportunities because, like, some fucking schmo thinks he knows best. And that's what really gets on my fucking tits is when you get these people that have got that get put in positions because, like, well, I know marketing, and then you're like, yeah, but do you know movies or comics?
Yeah, that is the thing. I often think that people, I mean, one of the things that keeps me going on comics and has done 40 odd years is the absolute fucking beautiful pages you see. You know, the apps. I was looking at X-Men Gold by Lambeau this week, I collected it on Friday. And every page, I think, this is fucking amazing.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. If only they used some of that in a post or in some advertising, I think it would draw people to the comics.
Yeah. It makes no sense, does it? There's like a fucking team of artists working at Marvel, yet they still put out shit posters.
The Justice League one. Oh my god! Firstly, how do they get all their heads together like that in for a selfie? Makes no sense.
I get frustrated at work because I do graphic design, and I get like a brief off the client, basically micromanaging me, telling me how to do the design for what they want. And I feel like saying, look, you do your side of the business. You've employed me as the graphic designer. I know my shit. I will do the best job for you.
It's like when you give someone with a piece of work with certain colours and they say, could you try these colours? What? Because I don't know what colours go together. I've specifically picked those colours. I'm going off on one. I've got to stop.
But then on the same vein, what always happens, and I'm sure you guys will agree with me, is that you put the project back. They say, can you tweak this? You say, I will, but it won't work because of this. Yeah. I don't see it. You send it back. It doesn't work. You're like,
I told you.
Awesome.
But I mean, you got to notice here, I am the only non-graphic designer in the room on this. Do you think it's because you guys are like so frustrated with the James Hunts you have to deal with on a daily basis?
Maybe.
That, you know, I'm going to make a comic. Do you think it's that?
100%. It's my only creative outlet.
Yeah.
Think what happens is a lot of people who are non-creative get put into positions where they have managerial powers over creatives, and they try to make those decisions, and it's frustrating. I think that's often what happens in the film industry. I don't think it happens so much in the comic industry. I think people who are kind of at the top, well, not all the way to the top, but kind of editorial.
Yeah,
position.
I think like Jeff Johns and Dan DiDio and you know exactly. even Jim Shooter and all these sort of people, they love the art form, don't they?
Yeah.
You know, I think I think that's the kind of the good thing about any comic company is that the people are in it and not in it because they're going to be millionaires. Because let's face it, there's easier ways to do it. Yeah. You know, but it's because they often yeah. love the art form. But, you know,
I reckon the point that Darren Ray, I could bang out like doing freelance shit and load of old crap and make money doing it rather than comics, which I'm not. I don't ever look at that as making money. It's kind of it's a hobby.
You lose money.
I enjoy doing it. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
I think that's one thing that sometimes when people see you at shows and stuff, they don't always realise that like how much money it costs to actually to be at a show.
Yeah.
You know, like you are passionate to be there, and it, you know, you want to engage with people and like hang out with them and stuff. But I think. The sad thing is when they just walk past your table, have a poke around, then walk off.
Yeah,
you're like, even if they buy something, it's just nice to talk about what you've spent the last fucking 2 months doing.
I think
if you're an artist and you're at the table and the money is really bringing you down and it's really fucking you off, I think you should question why you're being there. Do you know what I mean? Because I've spoken to artists when they're just absolutely just like, oh, this is fucked, I can't be dealing with this. And it's just like, think about this. I'm not being nasty, but like, if it's causing you this much distress, if you'd rather be at home doing the comic and put it out online for free or give it away for free, this is the same. You're not, there's no difference here, but you're upsetting yourself being here trying to sell the product or whatever.
You've only got to come to one of our tables at a convention. We are super excited, and I know probably you are.
Or knackered, depending on you.
Darryl, we know you are. You're like literally the most excited person we know at a convention. So
I am fucking pumped. If I am there, I am 100%. I mean, like Four Bubble the second day, I was fucked. I mean, I was like, I'd had 3 hours sleep. I was drunk. It was a bad day. I hadn't eaten. But everyone that came to my table, I was hugging, high-fiving, you know, like just, I was just excited for people to come and see my stuff because, you know, we spend so long sat at a desk boring and like wondering what people think. All I want to do is get people's feedback to help me progress.
Yeah.
Like it's kind of like a mass crit. And my stuff's cheap, you know, like my zines are £1.50, my comics are £3.50. You know, they're not like expensive things. And then generally, I'm a bit of a, I give things away. People buy multiple stuff. They'll get like an original piece of artwork. And I just want people to enjoy my stuff. That is why I'm there. It's just unfortunate that they charge a lot of money for the table. But I think I love it. I think but I think you've got to really, I've done too many this year. I've done like 6 or 7, I think, and it's like...
It does affect, I mean...
It gets a bit much.
Yeah.
Next year, I'm getting to the point where, because it is hard work and, you know, it does take money to go there and we do it because we love it.
Yeah, we do, don't we? Yeah.
But next year, I'm probably going to be more in the mindset of, right, I'm just going to create more. I just want to try and get more stuff out.
Yeah.
You know, because... this year I've been going to quite a few cons and I haven't necessarily had the stuff to shift there.
Yeah.
That's affected me in a way because you know, even though I'm proud of everything I'm selling, when you're selling the same shit every time, you know, sometimes you need an injection of fresh content really.
It's going to be a big year for us here, isn't it? Cause we've got our quarterly out.
So excited about the anthology. Yeah. You wouldn't believe. Like, every single piece I've seen come out from you guys, a little teaser, I've been like, oh my God, I can't wait to get my hands on this.
All into research material, and today I've got the Street Hawk annual and the Knight Rider annual. To try and get that aesthetic.
Have you guys seen, you may not have, but there's, I bought this comic called Vandroid.
Yeah.
I've seen that one.
I bought it for
fucking hell, Dan. Get on it, son. I tell you.
We bought it for Vanda in America, for Bri Vanda.
Yeah.
It's good. Who's the Scottish artist?
It's Tommy Lee Edwards, Noah Smith, and Dan McDade.
Nice.
But they did this whole fucking website and video where it was like a film, an 80s action film that never got made about a cyborg man. And it's just fucking brilliant. Like, they've got interviews in the back and like pictures of a guy with a very, very bad fucking mullet and like nice. Old footage that never got used and like action cards and crosswords and it's fucking nuts. It is, yeah, Dan, please.
I'm just looking at it now. I'll put that on my list.
Yeah, you should buy that.
It's nice cheap. I think it's cheap in Orbital, dude. I think.
Okay.
It's in the pound bin or whatever. It's 50p bin.
Okay. Yeah. Are you kidding me? I spent fucking £8 on this.
There was that trailer I shared the other day. Was it Robo Pope or?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
That was ace.
That's hilarious.
There's going to be so many awesome things in the show notes this week.
But James Gibbs shared that VHS artwork book, calling back to the movie posters of the old 80s VHS tapes, and they were like back in the day making a gamble. You would judge the film on the quality of the.
Oh God! Yeah. Imagine if the Troma movies lived up to their covers.
Oh God, yeah. They'd be the best thing ever.
Yeah, Nymphoid Barbarians in Dinosaur Hell. Imagine if that actually lived up to what it sounded like. You know.
Yeah.
This is exactly like 80s video games, isn't it? Like fucking Commodore 64, and you look at the tape, and some like strapped dude fucking swinging across like a with some sexy broad in his arm. You're thinking, shit. She's hot.
This.
He's buff. This is gonna be epic. And then it's like a series of pixels.
That's like a metaphor for my whole life.
I said I'd put that Nymphoid Barbarian on my wife's Amazon wish list to watch. I've got the metric. But I'm interested in this.
Because they've dumped all the Troma on Amazon, haven't they? All the Troma movies are on there pretty much now, yeah. I watched Surf Nazis Must Die the other day, and that is fucking terrible.
That. That's fucking awful.
I've
never seen it before, a Samurai Cop.
I still need to watch that.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh fucking, that's great.
It's unbelievable.
It's like a kind of couple of 13, 14-year-old boys watched Lethal Weapon. It's like, well, we can do this. Yeah. And then they, like... They, like, adults have made it, and it's just like, this is fucking mad.
That's like Kung Fury, it sounds like. Do you remember Kung Fury? That was fucking awesome.
But with Kung Fury, there's a bit of like tongue in cheek with
they
it.
Know,
and
they know exactly
like,
what they're doing with Kung Fury.
I'm surprised there's no Kung Fury comic. Has there been one?
Oh, I don't think so.
I'm surprised they haven't crossed over and done something like that. It's the sort of thing somebody would do, isn't it? You know?
Yeah.
One thing that's popped up this week. We want to fucking puke blood is on Instagram. They've done these like animated comics of like the DC Justice League.
Oh no, fucking, not the ones with the cars.
The ones with the fucking cars.
Oh, well, like the Hot Wheels thing.
No, they're driving like Mercedes or something.
Yeah. And like Cyborg and the Flash are driving somewhere to save someone from a burning building.
Of course, the Flash needs to drive a car somewhere, doesn't he? Yeah, obviously.
When I saw it, like Bruce Wayne's driving a car with the Flash and the Flash eats all the pizza, so he has to run out and get some and then save some people. Oh. And it was like, what the fuck is this? Like,
what annoys me, right, is when you get these people that do stuff like that and then no one has a go at them. But then if I do something, I get called out, like, in a second. It's like...
What frustrated me, I thought, I'll look at the comments because this is going to be fucking great. And then everyone was defending it, like, well, they do it in James Bond films. And so, they're a little more subtle. He drives a car in the film for 5 seconds. This is like a... shilling out the characters. It's just...
Yeah.
It's just, but people, it's kind of, they get into that generation where they see pimping yourself out for ads is not a problem. What's the issue?
Frank Miller must be sitting in his front room wearing that weird hat, just shouting, I told you, at his TV.
I'm so excited about getting on. I think I'm going to be the grumpiest fucking arse in the world. Just screaming.
Yeah. We've got a little handshake and a badge. I'll get you.
Yes. Oh, this is so good. ACP old group. It's
going to
be brilliant.
Oh, God. Time.
Brilliant. I love
it. In about 20, or I'd say 30, 40 years, message boards and social media is not going to know what hit it. It's old people with too much time on their hands, constantly complaining about everything.
We'll be plugged into a machine somewhere by then.
We'll all be in an apocalyptic wasteland. One of us will probably be food for the cannibals.
I was kind of hoping I was going to get robotized or something, like a robot leg or arm or something cool.
I'm desperately hoping for some kind of zombie invasion. I literally watch these films and think it's like a wish fulfillment for me, because I hate everyone. And just being able to live in a little cottage somewhere and have to fight zombies off once a day, that'd cheer me up. I'd actually quite enjoy that. Rather than have to put up with fucking smelly armpit people on the fucking tube every day.
So, Tony, you're in the cottage by yourself and there's loads of zombies around you. Do you think you could beat them off?
Yeah, I'd beat them off.
Yeah?
How many could you beat off before...
What, in a day? Yeah. I reckon I could beat about... easily 10 times in a day.
I don't know, you've got to reload, didn't you? Like, you've got to be...
Yeah. So I would never go out with a loaded gun. I would always load it while I'm out and then fire it.
Yeah? Yeah.
It's, the thing I'd be worried about, because it's wasteland, is having enough ammunition. Yeah. You know, you've got to make sure you keep fully stocked.
Protein up.
Yeah. Eat some pineapple.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
What are we talking about here? I'm confused now. This is like that time on Garvey and Leahy's and Chris Imber's panel where they kept saying subtle sexual things and I had to keep stopping it at Nottingham saying, right, is there some competition that I'm not aware of? Because Matt Garvey said, it sucks, 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 and then looked at me and winked and I thought, right, something's going on here. Yeah. We will be getting the audio of that and I'll let the audience decide, I think, on that one. Yeah.
What you just said, there's definitely a subtext going on there.
Yeah, I think so.
There's been a lot. I mean, sex is always on the menu when there's John Leight around, obviously.
Is it?
The Lidl's version of Ryan Reynolds. Lovely.
He can regret that comment, and I wish I could take it back.
Lidl's is a good place to shop, as we've all discussed previously. If only they sold comics, it'd be fucking perfection.
It would be amazing. Oh, dear. So
selling comics like Botman and Spider Dude.
Yeah.
Spider Rebadged. Dude.
They'd sell Dr. Screw in the TARDIS, wouldn't they? They'd sell that DVD.
Yeah.
You've got them all anyway, Tony.
I only got one. It was a present. Yeah.
Is there more than one adventure of Dr. Screw?
There's a whole box set.
Okay.
Yeah. Pardon the pun. Now, it's been a thoroughly enjoyable talk about Comic Con. I knew just talking about the sequential form would go in all sorts of directions, and hopefully you enjoyed our little chat. I think we'll discuss it again, because it's like art. It's completely subjective, and it's... obviously, our opinions are our own, and you've obviously... there's probably a few listeners screaming at their iPods or screens or whatever, saying...
They're going to be objectively wrong.
Every day in my life.
This is where... this is that situation where I've been waiting forever for people to follow me and talk to me online, and I'm just going to get barraged with hate. Yeah. So, can't wait for that.
It's quite nice. I quite enjoy it. You have to sort of perversely enjoy it.
Yeah.
Maybe I just rile them up a little bit. That'd be fun.
You just got to lean into it. That's what we
do.
Nice. Just lay back and let it happen.
Can I just make, before we go off and do our things, can I just quote something that I wrote down in the research for this? Yes, we do research these programs. It's something that was quoted about... we're talking about Roy Lichtenstein as we began this, so it might be quite nice to bookend it. And it's... when asked about Lichtenstein, Art Spiegelman, the creator of Mouse, amongst other things, said, "Lichtenstein did no more or less for comics than Andy Warhol did for soup." I think that's fucking quite a telling quote.
That is fucking good.
Yeah. There you go. A bit of highbrow for you there.
That's amazing.
That's great. Yeah.
And I think that's a perfect bookend to this week's chat.
Yeah.
So do we have any shout-outs, gents?
I have got one. It came from Mr. Penguin himself, from Falkirk Library Comics Takeover. It is Saturday the 25th of November, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m, where comics are going to take over the Falkirk Library in Scotland, if anyone wondered. It's guests are David Bishop, Claire Forrest and Shah Nazir. They're going to have panels, art stalls. We're seeing a lot of these library takeover events, and they really work. I've been to a few now, and they're really great events. So it's in Hope Street in Falkirk, so pop along on Saturday the 25th. Great stuff.
And certainly Alan, our mate Alan, he's definitely marked out. I think we're going to do a show in the future about pulp comics and pulp heroes.
Yes, I know he's a huge fan of it, as I am. So yeah. I'm really looking forward to that. Yeah.
So you heard it here first, Alan. You're marked for death.
I was going to give a shout out to the Woman and Comic Art Festival.
Another which, one in the library?
Yes. Yeah,
when you're listening to this, it will be on the Saturday the 11th of November at the Merton Art Space Woman and Library, SW19. It's from 10:30 till 4, free entry. It's a comic creation workshop for all ages. It's got the likes of Matt Garvey, Heather Chapman, Dave Broughton, Kaylee McHugh, Garth Hopkins, and many more. Nice. Come on, the awesome comics pod will be down there. Should be a really good day.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this. It's me and you are going to be there, Dan, aren't we? Sort of.
Yeah. Oh, indeed.
Yeah. I'll be there. I might even get the train down so I can get fuck faced afterwards.
You fucking animal. Go on, Tony.
Right. Okay. Do we have any recommendations this week?
Do I not get a shout out?
Do you want a shout out?
That's
well,
no,
to be honest, you've been a bit cheeky all show.
Sorry.
If you promise to behave yourself, you can have a shout. Oh, it's not nice when someone interrupts you, is it?
No. I'm not used to it. I'm used to talking louder.
Go on, Dick. Okay.
Okay, I'd like to give two shout outs, actually. One is to Mum. She's been awesome. She raised me, which is awesome. So I'd like to thank her.
Sorry that she's had to listen to this. I apologise.
Sorry, Daryl's mum.
Yeah. I think she'd just miss everything out of it and just be more excited that I'm on it. And
will she be really upset about your language?
No, she's used to it. I usually get hit though, so it's quite nice to just not get hit. So that's cool. She's one of those people that will look at something, not really read it, be like, "Oh, it's amazing you created this," and then like put it down, and I'm like, "Cool." Yeah. Cool, like mum love, you know, it doesn't matter.
I know that feeling.
Yeah. It's both embarrassing and sometimes quite nice when no one else cares. So, hey, mum. And the other one is Joe Totti as well. Like I mentioned him before, but if you've had a chance to see him do his Inktober, he did a full comic, 31 kind of sections of a story. It's just been absolutely brilliant. So, looking forward to working with him. I think it's at Life of Toti or something on Twitter, but he's got like 100 followers. I can't get my head around it, but because the guy's like talented, you know.
There was a bit of banging there. Sorry,
he's tapping like a monkey. Just the tapping bit, not me talking. That's what's gonna happen. I'm gonna listen to this on Monday and there'll be like no recommendations from Dan's.
the other one, talking of Inktober, was Martin Simmons.
@Martin_Simmons
with a DS on the end on Twitter. Fuck me, that's some good shit there. I tell you, he did like a rock star music character every day, and the Nick Cave that he put out 8 hours ago, as we record this, but last week as you listen to it, is probably my favourite. Just brilliant.
It's really good to see his work when he's pared back the effects and not gone to town on Photoshop, and you just see the underlying structure is absolutely quality and just
I think that's what's good about Inktober, isn't it? It does do that. You kind of see the bare nuts and bolts of what people ink. And I think, like, especially me being an artist or whatever, is, you know, it's really interesting sometimes to see either how much work a colorist has to do to make something look good, or like how loose some artists are with their line work, which is quite interesting. I've enjoyed October. It's been fun.
Yeah, there's a lot of great stuff out there. How people keep it up, I don't know.
Hats off to anyone who does it.
I saw one artist that did, like, you know how, like, some jam pieces are like a grid of, like, headshots and stuff?
Yeah.
They drew themselves a grid of, like, different shaped boxes, and every day they filled in that box with a headshot, which is a great idea.
That's a great idea.
Because, I mean, I haven't had... You know, I've always wanted to do it, but I just fall out of the rhythm of it, or finding it on an A5 sketch pad, I probably would miss one day. But to do this little sort of headshot section, and then at the end of it, you've got a big sort of jam.
You've got something you can probably sell as well, do you know what I mean? There's a lot of stuff I've seen on Inktober, I think, I wonder if that's for sale.
Yeah.
Wouldn't mind that, you know.
They are, Tony. Mine are all for sale. Hey.
Is it Claire Spiller? Is that her name? The lady we had on from Wine and Bird Stuff's been brilliant as well. Really great.
Awesome. Yeah. Brilliant stuff. Anyway, who wants to go first on the recommendations?
So if I jump in first, a quick re-recommend. I was given the Lufus Stroh complete series.
He sent us a picture of you with your grinning face, and
it's absolutely fantastic. It's so good.
Yeah,
I can't. I'm not all the way through it. I only read one at the first trade of it, and I thought, okay, I'm going to save this.
Oh, really?
And,
so you hadn't read? You hadn't read two?
No. Oh. So I've kind of been waiting, and then when they announced the complete series, I was like, oh, I'm getting that.
Yeah.
And it's turned up, and it's such a great book. Tradmore
is a monster.
Space, isn't he?
He's just a monster. Like you see stuff on Instagram, and the ink stuff, and it's just the structure and the understanding of what he's doing is just it's masterful. It's really awe-inspiring when you see these kind of stuff, and it's definite kind of. Feeling that kind of influence from the kind of movement and energy he puts in his work and trying to get it into mine. Yeah, it's great stuff. And the story ain't
up,
bad too.
Yeah, it's backed up. Justin Jordan, isn't it? Justin Jordan is backed up with a really good cinematic story, isn't it? I love that book.
It's great, yeah.
Yeah. How big is it? Pardon?
it's chunky. It's like...
good size.
I think it's just over A4 size. And
oh, really?
It's
oh, wow.
A good... couple of 2.5 inches thick and the book it's a weighty tome and well worth your money.
Nice
Good. Who's next?
I always like comparing a comic to your knob. That's always a nice little structure to base a review around, is talking about your knob, and then we must do that more often actually.
Well, I've made the change from talking about comics from get the trades as opposed to floppies.
I mean, other genitals are available. We can compare genitals. Yeah. You know, we're not stopping any kind of other genitals appearing.
Yeah.
No, if you want to make references to comic books and your genitals, you go for it.
Please write in to Jester Diablo at Hotmail.
Oh,
I'm so creating that later.
Anyway, who's next?
Go on, you go, V, because I'm desperate to hear your opinion on this book, because like we literally share our mutual love for this particular company, but I'll let you do it. Go on.
This is a book that I have not finished yet,
right?
But I've made a good start to it, and it is so beautiful and wonderful and informative that I have to recommend it as soon. I had to recommend it as soon as I possibly could. It's a no-brow book.
Yep.
And it is Robert Moses, the Master Builder of New York City.
Yes, son. I saw that today.
By Pierre Christin. I'm murdering the names, of course. And Olivier Ballet. I'm sure that's probably...
Yeah, it sounds about right.
Names.
Yeah. Now, basically, this is the story, I mean, as it says on the back, from the streets to the skyscraper, from Wall Street to the Long Island suburbs, every inch of New York City tells the story of one man's mind. Robert Moses, the master builder who designed the modern metropolis. More influential than presidents or mayors, Moses brokered control of the Big Apple and built a city beyond imagination. Now, this is just a magnificent book. I mean, the quality's there in Nobrow's presentation anyway. Is it a translation or is it an original one?
I think it's a translation. It's originally a French book entitled Robert Moses, Le Maître Caché de New York.
Yeah.
And I think this is... Did you get the soft cover?
Yes.
Yeah, I think this is... They occasionally do this with some of their books where they have a hard cover out and then they bring it out as a sort of 3 quid cheaper soft cover. Yeah, that's what I got.
Now, the pull quote on the back is an excellent overview of one of New York's most powerful public figures and the legacy he left behind. And
that doesn't do it justice.
But that is from the School Library Journal.
No, yeah.
And I like that because this is hugely, hugely informative.
Yes, yeah, an education.
This is I knew nothing really about Robert Moses. I can honestly say that. Obviously, I love love New York and the look of it and the style of it, but I didn't know about this man's legacy, which to a lot of people they wouldn't necessarily know. You know, he has been in some ways. He remains obscure, as it says in the, towards the end of the book. But his presence is felt over the creation of this city, and it basically tells a story of his life and his legacy and his work and stuff. I mean, it immediately began with Robert Moses never learned to drive, even if he often posed paying at toll booths.
I love that quote as the opener. That was so good, wasn't it?
So good. And it's almost like a textbook, isn't it, really, Tony? It's got that sort of telling the story of a man's life. If I was a kid, I'd learn more about this man reading it like this than I would if it was prose.
But to me, it's like a textbook if Darwin Cook drew a textbook for you.
Completely. I cannot say this enough. This is one of the most beautiful looking books I've seen in quite some time. The artwork is absolutely stunning. I think if someone said to me, if you could draw in any type of style, what would that be? I'd want it to be the style that's in this book.
Fucking hell, that's a statement, isn't it?
And it's not just the ink work, it's the colours, it's the details. This is a book all about New York City as well. So architecture and...
Yeah. Hard one.
It's just mind-blowing, seeing the cityscapes, but also there's a soft colour palette to it, which really gives it that timeless sort of feel. The likenesses in characters, like there's a page with lots of American presidents on in there, Tony. I really like that.
Yeah, I have to say, to me, when I first saw that page, I thought, oh, that's a little bit stock footage. But then I realised that it was done in that stock footage way for a particular way.
Yeah.
Because you can sort of capture each image as you scan across a page, and it draws that historical, because you recognise each photograph that is now a drawing, you know.
Yeah.
It so captures that.
And it's got these lovely little quirks in it. Like there's two panels which split into two, and it says, like, Batman doing good and bad in Gotham City from his secret manor. Robert Moses reshapes the city and his surroundings from his equally protected lair on Randall Island by the East River. And the way they've split this panel in two, you've literally got Batman on one side. It splits the characters in two, and you've got Robert Moses on the other. So many wonderful artistic touches.
I don't know about you, but the page that... I was really enjoying it, and then I got to page, just trying to look it up, page 15, where they show the gridiron building, and I thought, that's just incredible.
Yes.
It's the light on that building.
There is light, and there is economy of line that, you know, this stuff, it looks effortless. It's drawing artwork without actually... It is that wonderful, like Darwin Cook used to do. It's knowing what the right line is to put on the
and Jay page. Bone, people like that. Yeah. You know, there's that similarity there
completely and purely just from an architectural standpoint. The buildings have never been more beautiful. It's just absolutely stunning.
I think the thing for me, dude, is like New York's kind of, as comic fans, New York to a certain extent is a little bit like our spiritual home, isn't it? You know, and I know you've been there recently, and I've been there recently, and I love wandering around. It's a genuine wonder of the world, New York, the height and the scale and everything to it. Mm. And you wander around there, and everything has that familiarity to it. I mean, what city would you recognize? What, eight buildings?
Yeah,
you know, you'd recognize the Gridiron and the Chrysler Building and the Statue of Liberty and all this sort of thing. How many cities in the world do you get that? But it's because of the familiarity that we've grown through movies and TV and comic books and stuff. You know, we have a love for that city, don't we?
It's like every corner in New York, though, is like
a film set, isn't it?
Yeah, it's insane. And when the steam comes out from the fucking drain covers and stuff, it's like, it's insane.
I drove through New York with Christian Wild Goose in a cab, and he'd not been there before. And he literally sat there taking photographs of it all. And I said, what's it like? What do you think? And he says, I'm just taking photographs because all this will be appearing in Batgirl soon.
And I'm a sucker for like a picture of a cityscape. Do you know what I mean? Just seeing New York at night or anything like that. But the idea of drawing them is so daunting because in my mind, I feel like there's so much detail that has to be incorporated. And this, I'm as well as learning about this man and following this wonderful story and the way it's plotted out, I'm learning about what not to do, if you know what I mean. You don't have to overwork something to really get a sense, you know, because I've drawn like a city before. I drew like part of Liverpool for something, and I was looking at a reference, and it was so daunting to me because I was looking down from above and I felt like I had to get all the buildings right, all the lines in the right place. Whereas this, sometimes there's just a few brush strokes and a shade of colour, and it says it all.
It's done it, isn't it? Yeah.
And the, you know, we could talk about the art for weeks. We really could.
Yeah.
But this is a really fascinating tale, actually, and it's told really well in the sequential format, I think.
Yeah.
From page one, like we said, that moment with the toll booths, that is one of those. I read that page and I knew I was going to be reading the book till the end. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You got me. You completely got me. Yeah. So
is it interesting to read? Like, I mean, a lot of the comics I read are quite fictional, so I guess it's quite a nice break sometimes to read kind of factual.
But it's also quite cool as well, Daryl. You know, it's got that sort of Mad Men sort of cool about it to me as well.
Yeah,
and it's sort of, there are moments. It's like telling, it's narrating his life, but there are moments of dialogue. You know, there are people speaking to each other. It's not just a textbook just brought to life. There is there's story elements going on here. There is
little personal bits as well, where he goes swimming, or him and his friends drive off to the coast. And you know, that's what makes an interesting biography to me. Is you get, okay, it started on this date and this happened on this date, but in the middle of it, you get little moments. You get little personal moments. You know, about how one of them is afraid of flying, or you know, stuff like that. Just beautiful little moments, and I really like that.
Yeah.
And I have to say, the big thing about this book, $12.99.
Yeah.
How good a price is that?
I don't understand how they fucking afford to do these.
I don't either.
It blows my mind.
They're so good. And another nice touch, a final sign off, there's a little map at the back, the Achievements of Robert Moses. And it's like it's just basically a little map, lines sort of pointing out parks, constructions, parkways, expressways, playgrounds, bridges, tunnels, all these little things that this man was responsible for. You know?
Yeah.
So, It's rare that I pick up a book and I truly think I'm going to learn something that I knew absolutely nothing about, and I'm loving every moment of it. And Robert Moses, the master builder of New York City, it deserves to be near the top of your list, people, because it's
definitely
fascinating
stuff. Oh, nice one.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
So there you go.
Nice for me. Good. Shall I go?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah. I'm going to deal with Kid Lobotomy.
Oh, my God!
Are you ready?
Is it Black Crown? No.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I've just been all over their fucking website like all week, just poring over everything they've been doing.
Oh, good man.
Fucking insane. Sorry, carry on.
Yeah, I agree, and it'll go that way in a minute. But this proves to me how the personal touch sells a comic. I'll be honest with you, Shelley Bond. When me and Dan were at the Pat Mills signing and talk, I got to grab sort of a good chat with her. And she's very personal. Basically, what's happened is Shelley has left Vertigo, don't know why, and she's ended up at IDW and created an imprint over IDW called Black Crown. And it very much evokes the early days of, and to me, anyway, personally, the better days of Vertigo, which is what she took over. And she has, she's basically created this street. So there's a street where the Black Crown pub is in it, and they'll different stories occupy different bits in the street. So this Kid Lobotomy occupies the hotel, believe it or not, in the street, and it's the stories that go on in the hotel. It's written by Pete Milligan. I'm a huge Pete Milligan fan. Shade the Changing Man is, I reread a couple of years ago. I don't know if you guys have ever read it, but it is nearly perfection, I would say. It's such a beautifully well-made story, still really readable, but at the time was just a revelation. He's done some Eternal Warrior recently as well, which I'd forgotten about. He did a series called Britannia, Bad Company, Enigma. He did that great X-Force run and Skin and stuff like that. The art is by Tess Fowler, who has done... I haven't read Rat Queens. Has anyone read it?
No. Oh, yeah. God, yeah. Yeah, I love Rat Queens, yeah.
Oh dear. Oh good. Okay. I've not read that. Oh, now, having seen her work, I'll probably go back and read it actually. And the
she didn't do all of Rat Queens.
She didn't. Oh okay.
No, I think it was. Is it a second arc? Third arc? Either way.
Oh okay.
Either way, right. It's bloody awesome.
Brilliant. Excellent. Yeah. And there's a variant cover by Frank Quitely, which is it really really evoked early Vertigo to me. So it's described as I think
Pete Milligan himself describes it as Kafka meets King Lear, which is not as highfalutin as you think once you start reading it. It's a dark, he describes it as a dark, demented monthly satire that follows a dysfunctional family of hoteliers, believe it or not. There's sibling rivalry, seduction, and shape-shifting. So Kid is the central titular character who lives near the Black Crown pub in this hotel. His father is the local kingpin, but the local kingpin of seedy hotels. And he's given this hotel to run, Kid Lobotomy. But Kid also has this extracurricular hobby of performing lobotomies on people and eating the bits of brain that he removes. This kid does go off on one. It really does. The kid isn't sane. He has a preoccupation with a strange sort of space gun stroke operating room gizmo that he uses to do his lobotomies with. And he goes on and on about wanting to play the harp rather than the guitar in the band he plays in. At one point, he's got his sister. The way the King Lear element comes into him is he's sort of a war with his sister to become the king, almost, you know, or that neither one of them wants to become the king. And his sister alternatively appears at one point, and there's a sort of sexual contact between him and his sister, and then alternatively his sister turns out to be a proper nutter and drowns her boyfriend in the bath. The rundown hotel has got a sort of a Hindu model of an elephant that's also broken down on its roof, and amongst it you get like dead children who are ghosts who are cleaning up and stuff like that. The rooms and the lobby and the passage and the passageways are just full of just the most fucking freaky things you'll ever see. There's a fish with a mouth that looks suspiciously like a piece of genitalia, which I'll let you tell. Which also has a piercing in it. There you go. I'll let you imagine nice. That. There's a great splash page that shows these fish flying about, and there's a creature with wings, and there's a creature with a lizard's tail, and there's also businessmen and punks and dark-eyed old men. But what Tess does, Tess Fowler, the artist, is she shows this big splash page of the hotel lobby where people are trying to book in and all this sort of thing. But what she does is she has a couple of the characters look towards the camera, look towards the reader. And it just it has that sort of strange haunting quality where everyone else is going about their business, and this includes dead children wearing headphones and, you know, tentacled creatures and all this sort of thing. But you get two of the characters just looking back at the reader. Really interesting way of doing it, I have to say. But because of this sort of mentalness that's going on in the hotel, Kid Lobotomy, he can't seem to really separate reality from his own sort of mental state. He one point he gets a slap from a chambermaid because he pinches her to see if she's real, and the story then swaps over to an old man who turns up, and he's constantly hearing music in his head. He can't get lyrics of songs out of his head, which I suppose is something we've all experienced to a certain extent, isn't it? Yeah. And Kid Lobotomy sees him, and Kid Lobotomy is all cheered up and thinks this is going to go good because I'm going to operate on him, and then the book goes even mentaler, goes even sort of crazier, and something happens at the end which I won't disclose because I think you should read it. I really do. Pete Milligan has never disappointed me with what he's written. Shade the Changing Man, the second volume, not the Ditko volume, the second volume when it went to Vertigo. I loved it, absolutely loved it. I know Ricky Miller quotes it as one of his favourite ever books. And a lot of people quote that era, especially as a sort of an influence on their writing these days, because it's that sort of period. I think a lot of us went, oh, Christ image, really? And we turned elsewhere. And I think that's where Vertigo succeeded at the time with all these ideas.
Yeah.
And this book really does feel like that. It feels like books like Kid Eternity and Egypt and the Books of Magic and Sandman and Enigma and Doom Patrol and The Dreaming and all that sort of glorious goodness that came out at the time. So Pete and Tess are creating this story, which has got real depth to it. You know, it's cool, but it also has that sort of nostalgic mod cool feeling to it, if that makes sense. But it's also swapped over, it converges with stuff like Pete's run on Rogan Gosh, Star of the East, if anyone read that, and his story, Johnny Nemo. You might have read Johnny Nemo, Daryl, because I think it appeared in, it was either Escape or Deadline, I can't remember.
Yeah, it sounds familiar, yeah.
Yeah.
It does sound very Deadline, doesn't it? Like
yes, it does. It really
the idea, like, and the depth of where they're trying to tell the story is just fucking mega exciting. Yeah, it just sounds so fresh, you know.
Mate, that's exactly how I feel about it. Yeah, because I think Shelley's trying to do something that she was very successful with and create this really sort of trippy, experimental, yet, you know, she will carry people along with her on this sort of ride of all these books at once. I put them all on my pull list, you know. The other nice touch is she got them to write in. She got the artist and the writer to write in. So the letters page has got like a fake letters page at the back. And it's Pete Milligan and Tess Fowler. I'll read you Pete's. Pete Milligan here. Sometime figment of Kid Lobotomy's distressed imagination. Perennial disruptor of turned down services. Writing a book like this makes you feel a little bit like a ghost, inhabiting the hotel and listening in on its guests. I am, though, an unusual kind of hotel guest. Ghost, talk to me and I'll talk right back. So that's the sort of nutty stuff I like. You know, it's just like mental, you know.
That's wicked.
Yeah. Oh, and so good. Yeah, so it's they are really creating a world. They really are sort of creating something that someone could, I mean, a comic fan could just read Black Crown and enjoy it, you know. It's almost like that run of comics. Yeah. It's a book that I'll put it on my pull list, like I say. It will probably make a great trade as well, but I would suggest you read it in issues. It's full of sort of quirky cool. And there's a teaser for another one of their series called Assassinistas, and that's from Tinny Howard, who was also on a panel at New York that I saw, and Gilbert Hernandez, of all people. I love the Hernandez brothers. So they're doing a book for them. Pre-order it. If you go to www.blackcrown.pub or www.idwpublishing.com, and I think they're on Twitter, at BlackCrownHQ. Yeah. I'm sure Shelley will love you forever, and it's well worth looking at. And as we talked about earlier, read Deadline. Shelley's husband is Philip Bond, who also did loads of work for Deadline magazine, and he has designed a lot of the logos and the he's designed the sort of street that all these characters live on. Yeah, very clever stuff. And I hope, as an experiment, I really hope it succeeds. And I think the feedback they're getting at the moment is really good. So I think it will be a success. So it's something you really need to get on board now. It feels a little bit to me like the start of Valiant did, for a different reason, for a different crowd. You know, they're building, very cleverly building up an audience with these different sort of styles of books, but all enveloped in the same universe. Very clever. There you go. That's my one.
That's one.
Cool. Daryl, what's your recommendation?
Oh, someone for me to recommend some high shit, peeps. I'm going to recommend I Hate Fairyland Volume 3, Good Girl. Right. I'm a bit of a trade whore in that I don't get the individual issues because I'm fucking useless and I like to just binge read the fuck out of comics like I like to watch Netflix. Like, I watch Stranger Things Saturday, bam, that's how I roll. You know, I don't fuck around.
Is there a TV series called Stranger Things, is there? I've not heard of it.
Tony,
what's this?
Fuck off. All right, I listen to you waffle on for hours. Don't take the mick out of Stranger Things, because you'll have a fucking uprising, sunshine.
Revolution.
Yeah, tell me about it. Fuck me, Stranger Things. I can't believe you said that.
Is that like the Goonies?
All right. Yeah, it is, actually.
Yeah. Wind your neck in, Esmond.
Oh, no, I won't say anything. Oh my god, spoiler alert. Almost spoiled. Almost did a fucking bake-off, didn't I?
Yeah, I'm not all the way through it yet.
Yeah. Almost let the custard creams go. Basically, I've been reading I Hate Fairyland. I read the first volume, the second volume, and the third volume just come out now. And it's illustrated and written by Scott Young, who's a fucking hero. Like, his ink work and artwork, anyway, is just sensational, but the actual storyline of it all is just I think it's amazing. I won't say anything too much about it because I don't want to give it away, and I'm pretty shit at keeping a lid on things, but I will do what Vince does and read the bit on the back. So ignoring the lessons of her future battle self, Gert geeks out, gets geeked on, gets got, and goes good. Fucking hell. I should have read this before. While she explores the convention world, makes rash generalizations about other cultures, and deftly navigates the consequences of her own actions. Her trusty, if not mouthy, questioning guide, Larry, pulls on It's a Wonderful Life and realizes he's actually might like and miss Gert. What? You actually...
it wasn't actually... a good idea for you to read this.
Read it all out loud.
Cut that out. Fucking hell. Basically, it's all about Gert trying to get out of Fairyland. That's what she just said at the beginning.
Yeah, I've read the first volume. It's a great series about someone who just
the second and the third one. It's just it gets better and better. Like, yeah. I can't recommend anything highly enough. And it's one of those books where, like, Scotty Young's imagination is just, it's like he can do whatever he wants in these books because she's like this sweet girl who's actually 30. And it's been like trying to get out of this world. She's like lopping heads off, like just completely crucifying people. But then in the same vein is trying to now be kind of good in order to get out of Fairyland. So it's just, yeah, I'm kind of halfway through. And I read half of it while waiting for Vince to come on the lines, you know, this evening. I was kind of sat there. So what, like half an hour, I just boomed through it because it's just,
you know, she's supposed to mean? What, like I leave people, well, yeah, I suppose, yeah, I do leave them hanging.
It's Tuesday, so I could listen to the pod, like, you know, Tuesday, fuck. yeah, it's good, it's like samurai bits in it and ninja bits and yeah, it's awesome. So buy it, I Hate Fairyland, volume 3, girl.
Okay. There you go. Brilliant. Yeah. Loads of brilliant books for you all to check out this week.
Yeah.
And thank you, Daryl, for joining us. And as we promised, yes, the most disgusting segment in the podcast. Yay! In the podcast world. It is returning. It is returning. And we've got one for you. We've got an absolute corker for you. Yeah. So Tony's going to tell you the name, and then Dan Butcher... He's gonna.
I would invite Mr. Butcher to describe to me what an Alaskan pipeline is.
So the definition goes: the act of pooping into a condom, freezing the rubber overnight, then inserting it into one's anus.
Yes, we've all done that.
Or as some of our listeners probably know it as, a Thursday night.
Or the waiting for Vince to post the podcast.
Look, I could quite easily just edit you all out.
People actually do that. That's insane.
We do not advocate that anyone tries
God
this.
God knows we do.
If you get stuck, you can use a crisp packet.
Oh, exactly. Right. Okay. Stay tuned for the outtakes to find out what that nonsense is all about. And that Urban Dictionary, Dan's Dictionary Corner, was just for you, Daryl. There you go.
Oh, yeah. I've missed it so much.
Yeah. And
I've been sending the boys on the WhatsApp a few variations. Yeah. I sent them Alaskan Pipeline, and both Dan and Vince immediately went, "That's the one."
A good name, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I'd like to go to Alaska. I hope they don't all do that there.
No.
Oh,
that's
God,
pretty outlandish. I mean, what point do you get to in life where you think this is the idea we're going to go with?
When I barely ever look at my...
It's recycling, Dan. So yeah.
It's true, environmentally friendly.
You know.
I really need a shit, and then you see the condom. You're like, oh, that's an idea.
Oh, no.
And I've often looked at a carrier bag when I've been desperate on the bus, but you know, never.
Yeah. The thing is, Tony, you've really got to choose your own carrier bags because I don't think it's right what you do.
You still had her curtains in it.
Anyway, we hope you lot have enjoyed the show. Let us know what you thought of this nonsense. And I think we did well. It was like the topic was well spoken about, and all the other shit that we did was, you know, it didn't take away from the actual topic. I think it was very good.
Still on there? Is it still going to be recorded?
Yes.
No? Oh, yeah. Fuck. No, definitely. I agree. Yeah, I thought you were just saying that as a...
No.
We're not talking.
We are still
recording.
He's got
to do the stay freaky, stay awesome bit. You've got to do
that.
But before I do that, people have got to know how to get in touch with us. And there's several different ways that you can do that. You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com just to tell me how goddamn good I am at segues. You can also if you want to let us know about any events or anything else coming up soon, you can also get in touch with us, tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at @theawesomepod. We've got a couple, yet more good guests coming up.
Yes.
They're not as good as you, Daryl, of course.
No, well, you fucking said it, aren't you? So, yeah.
Oh, don't worry. When you listen, when you listen to the next show, you'll hear us talk about how good they are and how they were better than you. Yeah. So,
you say that to everyone. I've seen
I do. I do. Yeah,
we're recording this early, so you've got to wait a whole week to find out how fucking stupid we sound.
Now, yeah. Do I listen to it on Monday? Because I've got very conflicting views about this. I don't want to hear myself being absolute knobhead on...
No, you'd be fine.
Well, I'll tell you what. We've listened to it for 2 hours, so I wouldn't bother, mate. I wouldn't... Yeah.
Cut it out.
But I tell you what you should bother with. You should get onto our Facebook page, facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast, and join the best comic group
on and meet Facebook. Little Tony, he's on there, isn't he?
Yeah. I don't think any of the culprits will be listening, but remember that there's a post we got pinned about sales post.
Yeah.
Don't post sales post because we want
know
to
know who you are.
Imagine you're having was after a con and you're all sitting around having a drink just talking comics and stuff, and then someone bursts in and starts saying, oh yeah, we can buy this of mine, I've got a comic here. How much of an arsehole would that person be?
Good comparison. I like that person. Very good.
Yeah. So Awesome Comics Talk is a no arsehole zone. Well, apart from the three administrators, but we can't do much better.
That's true. Yeah. Sorry for letting that post go for 3 days without okaying it. Gotta say. Sorry.
Yeah. We're not working, you're not paying, somebody's paying our wages to do this, so it's...
Do you reckon they listen? I hope they listen.
Nah.
Fuck it, we can do it.
They tried.
Yeah. But we want to thank you all for listening, whether it is on their website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes or any of the networks, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife, Tony Esmond, Bum Network.
Tony Esmond Bum Network. Right, that's not already a website. Can you get a .bum? Is that a website you can get, .bum?
Yeah, I would thought so.
That'd be good. Yeah,
it's probably just a website full of pictures of Doc Cotton's bum. Anyway,
Cotton's bum.
Don't Google that. That would
be awkward, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I'm not having that in my search history.
Always purge the browser. leave us a lovely review.
Please. We went there on pages.
Go on, please. That'd be really nice. Thank you. And where can people find us online, etc., Tony?
Ezo, yes, Ezohyz, neverironanything.blogspot.co.uk, which if you go to this week, you'll see some evidence of the book that me and Vince went nuts for again. So there you go. There's a little review with some images and pages and stuff on there.
Do sign up for the Cotney Kung Fu mailer, because that's great.
Thank you very much, mate. Cheers. Thank you.
Yeah. And Dan, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com.
I can't wait for the next page, mate. I really can't. Yeah.
I can't wait
for the Street Hawk influence. I'm waiting for that as well. That's going to be good.
Oh, that's going to be in the Viper comic. Yeah. That's
Dan's life is basically influenced by Street Hawks. So don't worry about that.
Yeah. That's how he runs in the house.
Yeah.
I used to watch Street Hawk and thought, I really want a van so I can just ride a motorcycle out the back of it.
Yeah. And I said if I won the lottery, I would have like the car garage would be something like it came out of the lawn, or you know, and it's like, Dan, this is going to take out 2/3 of your money. Fine.
Yeah. I want the fountain to part and my car to drive out the hole in the.
So this all looks fantastic. You can only afford a mini metro.
That'd be brilliant. That's how the time only pulls and horses, isn't it? Yeah. Like a lion pulls out of a
pootling out.
On his Segway.
Dry ice billowing out.
And a little cake just flowing behind you.
Yeah. That's what you'd have now in East London. They wouldn't have Street Hawk, would they? They'd have a Scooter Hawk or something, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Some rollerblade.
It'd be E-Hawk or I-Hawk, and it'd be electric, so you can hear anything.
God, I already hate it. but you can follow me online at Jester Diablo and find out more about my comic at theredmousefrommars.com and my debut prose novel with Daniel Mark Chant,
which I've started today. It's very good.
Thank you, dude. Devil Kickers.
A lady writhing on a bed, which is always the best opening to any book ever.
There is a reason for it, folks.
That. Yes, no, I'll get to that, I'm sure. But I'm quite enjoying it as it is.
But you can read Devil Kickers, get it from Amazon. It's available now. And
just so you're aware, your book aroused me. I just want to put that out there.
Amazing. It's the first, first time one of my books has. Normally I've got to work a lot harder. Daryl, where can people find you?
They can find me on Twitter at Mr. Forpy, MRFORPE. And I'm going to say it. They can now go to, hopefully by fucking Monday, they can go to a website called freedom.co.uk, which is a kind of art comic thing that I've been working on, which I sent to you guys
for
the show. So hopefully I've pulled my finger out this weekend and actually like got it done. So yeah, freedom, freedm.co.uk.
And I can thoroughly recommend going past Daryl's table at a convention and buying something, because I've bought some and have been gifted actually some beautiful artwork by this man. Really good.
Gifts a lot of people. I'm very much one of those people that if you're pumped about like art and comics and stuff, I would generally just give you stuff to make you happy. It's a curse.
Daryl was one of the nicest people I've ever encountered at a Comic Con. He's an absolute legend.
Yeah, if you want a bit, you need a bit of enthusiasm for your project, stop by his table, he'll cheer you up. That's
about it. I'll fucking cheer you up like no one else.
Yeah, and I think he's a so.
I'm the only person who hasn't said that word this time.
Oh my god, you dropped the C bomb.
There's three of them I've got to edit in this week, right? Okay. But it has been an absolute pleasure talking to you this week, mate.
Yeah, that's you're
welcome back.
Cheers, Daryl.
Anytime.
Am I? When? Yes.
Here we go. He's going to be the one that's going to keep hassling us, isn't he?
Yeah.
I won't hassle you. I just turn up a lot.
Well, we hope you all out there have enjoyed this week's show. Stay tuned next week for more awesomeness. And from Dan, Tony, Daryl, and myself, read loads of comics. Stay safe. Yep. Do something artistic and make people happy. Yep. And as always, stay awesome. See ya.
See ya.
Hello, and welcome to the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place
where... Hello, Vince!
He's been planning that. Fucking hell.
Right.
That laugh, great.
I'm going to redo that.
Again, I promise.
Listen, I once had sex using a crisp packet because I ran out of condoms. That is a true story.
Fucking hell. Was it one of the grab bags?
Oh, that's hilarious. Is that before they became foil, or was that still when you could melt them in the oven?
It was salt and vinegar, so it hurt a bit.
Fucking soldier.
You were a soldier, yeah. You didn't turn it inside out.
No.
I mean, think of the ladies.
That's what I was thinking of. Yeah.